Well, think we're ready to begin here. I hereby call the regular meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors to order. Would you please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? We have all members. We have feedback too. No, it's long past Halloween. We'll correct that echo pretty soon.
Hello there.
Wow.
Is it all over?
Oh.
Hello? Ah, excellent, excellent. Yeah, we have a, I think I said we had a quorum of all five members present. And there is a report from closed session. Mr. Carmel, do you want to deliver that report?
Thank you, President Gray. At the November 14th regular meeting, the board held a closed session for a conference with its labor negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. The district's designated representatives were General Manager Matthew McElhaney and Attorney Che Johnson. The employee groups are the International Association of Firefighters Local 4635 and the Service Employees International Union Local 620. No action was taken. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Move on to the president's report. There's no president's report this time around. So I move on to agenda review, at which members of the board can either ask for an item to be moved or deleted, not added. Anybody want to change the agenda? Mr. Thomas, Director Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. I do notice we have a couple of members of the audience here interested in topic 7A. I don't know whether that can be moved earlier in the agenda or not, but they were interested in that possibility.
If the board actually has no problem with that, we can move it up to any time, because if we're ready, we take it up as a separate item, maybe right after public comment. Mr. McElhaney, is that work?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll just move 7A. To which is the first item of regular business to the position right after the public safety reports. Got another public safety pillar here too. So consider that done. Any other agenda changes? Okay, good. I'll move on to board member communications, in which any board member may make an announcement, brief report on their activities, or ask a brief question. I'll do Director Farmer first and then Vice President Scott.
Thank you, President Gray. So I know most of us realize how important, how valuable green space is here in our community. And once a year, they do a tree planting out near San Simeon State Park. And this coming Saturday is no exception. They're endeavoring to plant 1,000 trees as possible. It's going to rain that day, but I don't think that's going to prevent them from planting. In fact, that might be a good time to do some planting. So if you're interested, this is just if you go up to San Simeon Creek Road, you make a right there around Van Gordon Creek Road across from the state park. They'll be doing the planting for the third year in a row, by the way. And the previous two have been successful to some degree or another. So once again, from 10 to 1 this coming Saturday, right off of San Simeon Creek Road, Green Space is going to be doing their tree planting once again. And they're planting 1,000 trees. And it's from 10 to 1, but quite often they get done quicker than 3 hours, which is pretty amazing with the quality volunteers that they have. So there you are. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Vice President Scott?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. There is a banner on the front of the Vets Hall, and it is advertising that there is on Thanksgiving Day, beginning at 11:30, five churches and one major donor is giving is providing free Thanksgiving dinners for 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And please just come. It's not for any specific purpose. It's just for the community to come together and to share a Thanksgiving meal. And we would love to see you there.
Thank you, Director. Thank you, Pastor President Scott. It's been quite an event, 1,000 people over the afternoon. Yeah.
There are other communities that are doing this to the tune of 200 people, to the tune of 600 people, but we are serving 1,000 Thanksgiving meals.
Thank you. Director Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. And last month, Director Farmer mentioned the Lambton Cliffs County Park Restoration Project. Tuesday, I joined in on the fun pulling ice plant, and I would say we removed about another 10 to 15 cubic yards, and that was their fourth volunteer work party. And so come join us for the next work party. That's Tuesday, December 3rd, 9 a.m. at Lambton Cliffs County Park. These work parties are very, very well organized by volunteer Suzanne Fiedler, who I might say she's worked with the county on approvals. And I must say it's worth coming just to sample one of her cookies. And, and you've got to come and show up, in order to answer the question, do they rival the cookies of Karen Dean? So I encourage y'all to come. It's a great workout and a lot of fun. And yeah, thank you. Oh, and by the way, and on the green space planting this Saturday, I've heard also the rumor that they're going to come up with their famous PPJ bar. So that's one of the incentives. Well, okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Director Thomas. Any more comments from board members? I'll move on then to public safety. First, to start with the Sheriff Department report and see Commander McDonald's here. Welcome.
Good afternoon, members of the board, staff, members of the public. October was a good month for us here in Cambria. The deputies responded to one assault and battery call. It was just one battery report. There were 17 disturbances, 13 general disturbances, 2 loud music complaints, 1 neighbor dispute, and one party call. Fortunately, no fireworks were reported in October. We had 0 burglaries and 0 thefts reported in Cambria in October. There were 2 vandalisms. One was vandalism to a vehicle. The other was vandalism to a political sign. No mail thefts, no scam, phone scams or other scam reports. Pardon me. We had 8 suspicious circumstance calls, which included 4 suspicious circumstances, 3 suspicious persons, and 1 suspicious vehicle. The deputies working in Cambria in October conducted 19 enforcement stops. Those were all vehicle stops, and engaged in 20 preventative patrol activities, including 12 on-site activities, 4 parked vehicle checks, 2 extra patrols, 1 patrol check, and 1 foot patrol. Next Thursday, on Thanksgiving Day, the on-duty deputies are looking forward to joining Cambria in celebrating a meal here with you. They'll be cycling through and spending some time with the community. So, other than that, that's the end of my report, and I look forward to any questions or concerns.
Thank you. Thank you, Commander McDonald. Anybody from the board want to have a question? Harry, Director Farmer.
Thank you, Tom. Excuse me. Thank you, President Gray. It's Commander McDonald. Just this is something I've been curious about for a while. I thought I'd probably bring it up today. So with regard to Cambria, which has 6,000 people, and I noticed calls for service. So it's very close to Cayucos, which has like half of our population, and then San Simeon. So they have 15 calls for service, and their population is a little over 400, whereas we have 39, and our population is a little under 6,000. So why is it that basically we have, let's say, consider all things considered, fewer calls for service? Or why is it that San Simeon, with only 400 people, has 15?
So
does that make any sense what I just said?
So the number, like for Cambria, 39, those are reportable calls that resulted in like case numbers or a certain disposition. There were a total of 233 calls in. It has to do with whether a case number was pulled, I believe. I'll have to double check exactly what the reporting standard is to get to that number. But as you point out, San Simeon generally has far fewer actual reportable calls than Cambria because of the population base. But I do need to get us, as they say, circle back on that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Director Thomas.
Thank you, President Craig. And thank you, Commander McDonald. A couple of weeks ago, there was a carjacking, and it was in the month of November, so not obviously in this reporting month. But anything you can tell us about that?
No. However, next month, we will definitely inform. Trying to even remember that incident.
Some late night, I saw a lot of next door chatter, but I don't remember the details.
Okay, yeah. I don't recall off the top of my head having that come across my desk. I review all the reports from the entire area. Yes, definitely on next month's statistics, we'll provide some commentary on that.
Thanks. If it was there, then we'll hear about it next.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions? I'll open this to public comment at this point. Does anyone in present here want to comment on the sheriff's report? Ms. Dodson, anyone online?
No.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Commander McDonald.
All right, thank
you. See you next month.
Happy holidays.
You too. Next up, Fire Chief Michael Berkey, his report.
Good afternoon. I wanted to start really quick and put Commander McDonald on the spot here. This is going to be his last report for our agency. So sorry to throw you under the bus like that, but I just wanted to say, say thank you to him for all of his direction and valuable information that he's given me as I've tried to navigate this position. So it's been really nice to have somebody that we work so well with other agencies, and it's been an honor to work beside you. So thank you so much. So good afternoon, President Gray, members of the board, members of the community, members of the staff. Today I'm presenting kind of a new format on the fire chief's report. And then of course I'm open to any, questions, comments, concerns, regarding this, as we go through it. So just feedback is definitely, warranted and needed. So this was for the month of October 2024. This is an abbreviated version of what's online already. So anybody that wants more detailed information can definitely go to the website and get that full kind of, I think it's 9 to 10 page report, mm-hmm. that has a lot more detailed information than what you're going to find on this report here. So if you can go to CambriaCSD.org. at the fire department under the monthly stats, you'll find all of that further information if you choose to do so. So starting with the format that I created, it just starts with the standard incidents that we have. So I'll just kind of go through this, again, open for any questions or concerns or comments. So for the month of October, we had 0 fires, thank God. Medical emergencies, we had 53. We had 8 hazardous conditions events, 25 public service assists, 4 false alarms, for a total of 90 incidents for the month of October. Moving down the page, you'll see I created some just comparison information that I thought was pertinent. It's just basic information from year to year and also from the month prior. Also, we have the residents and non-residents listed there as well. So residents that we responded on were 50 and non-residents were 21. For the total of October 23, we had 88, a total of 88 calls. Year to date total for 2024 is 824 total calls. And then year to date total for 2023 was 877. So not too much difference from year to year. Moving on to the next page there, I tried to expand a little bit and elaborate on a little bit more of what we do at the fire department versus just the statistics that we have. This is just kind of, I wanted to open it up a little bit and kind of give the public a little bit more information about what their fire department is doing for them throughout the month. And so that's what I kind of tried to create here. It starts with training. Each crew reported a total of about 25 hours per shift. So that's A, B, and C shift doing about 25 hours apiece throughout the month of training. That's well underneath what is required, but that just shows the dedication and the diligence that they put forward to try and get these hours completed on top of all of the other activities that they've been tasked to do. So I listed a few of the training topics there. We had firefighter rescue scenarios that they performed. We had every month that they do paramedic refresher type skills, also EMT skills. And we always try and invite and include the CCHD on that as well. So we try and do a group effort on that. Another significant event, we had H-70 and Mercy Air training come up. They actually came and landed their helicopters at the dog park there, and they did we try and do it more than annually. We try and do it as much as possible because these are very low frequency, high risk type calls with the helicopter. So we try and get them to come out and train with us quite a bit. And so that was very interesting and very informative. So we had both of those agencies come up and do that for us. Also, continuing down, we always try and get our captains to do some command training. Most of those scenarios there are just wildland, mayday, and structured fire type scenarios. Again, continuing down, I included public education stuff, some little events that we did throughout the month. So we had Fire Prevention Week in month of October. We also had the burn relay, and we also, which included us kind of ending the relay all the way down. Then we drove the fire engines all the way through the entire county and ended down at the San Luis Obispo Farmers Market on that week. We also had Project Hero come through. That was a bike ride that came through. And then ending the month on kind of a happier note and fun note, we had Halloween and the Trunk or Treat event right down here at the Pine Dorado Parade. As continuing down, you'll see I also created kept the public service kind of, I just wanted to inform the board and the public a little bit about the business inspections and the residential defensible space inspections that we're doing as well. So those are listed there for you. Again, I'm open to any questions, comments, concerns. And that's the end of my report.
Okay. Thank you, Chief Berkey. Yes, Vice President Scott.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I love this new report. Just thank wanted you. To tell you that. It's really condensed, gives us what we need, and I appreciate your hard work to get it to us in this format.
Thank you.
Director Dean, thank you.
And I echo what Vice, I'm going to echo, aren't I?
Yeah.
No, you just have a little tiny bit of
okay. Okay, I echo what Vice President Scott says. This is a very, very nice report. It gives us all the information we need, and it looks really nice. I would like to know what consists of hazardous conditions? What kind of hazardous conditions do you respond to?
Those could be various. So they could be electrical emergencies, trees down in the roadway. There's a wide range of that type of stuff. If there's storm related events type stuff, flooding, any of those things. Okay. Anything that's not necessarily considered a fire or a medical emergency would typically fall under that category.
Thank you.
Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Gray. Mr. Berkey, thank you once again. I want to echo what the two ladies have said with regard to, especially because like my favorite color is orange. So I think this is like an awesome report, especially the first page. But
that would probably, that was just for the month of October. So I was going to try and change it up as we go through. Maybe for December we can do red or something like that. That's what I was.
Oh, it's a fire report.
Yeah.
So it's the idea. This is more of a. I called you and left you a message on your cell phone about 15 minutes before the meeting. So
today,
yeah. So if you would, if you could, if you could listen to that message and follow up on it, because the message I left you is something pertinent to one of the items on the agenda today. So if you could do that.
Excellent. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Thomas.
Thank you, President Gray, and how intriguing. And I just want to continue the kudos, and especially page two, talking about the specifics, you know, that we've done fabulous. Since this is recorded, I thought I heard you say the number of training hours and that it is under what's required. And is that what you meant, that the amount of training we've done is less than what is required?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's so we need to do more.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. It's very difficult for the crews. And this is on a yearly basis. And we've been trying to, increase the ways that we train and try and, you know, come up with a different, it's very difficult to meet the requirements for every single training level. So we have different level training at captains, engineers, and firefighters. And so it's increasingly every year it increases, and it's very difficult to maintain that. But 25 hours, I know that doesn't sound like a lot throughout the month, but for those guys to actually complete that training is very significant.
Thank you. They've been
doing a great job.
Yeah, that's a bunch. And we recognize that you have a lot of situations you respond to infrequently that are high risk and high intensity, risk for the individual you're rescuing and for your staff. So I'm certainly all behind, whatever we can do to help your training. Another issue regarding the public comment, November 14 from Tony Church asking for a schedule of the testing of the fire hydrants. Interesting. And as I was looking at the collection system jetting data from the utilities report, light went on. Well, something like that would be really cool for the fire hydrants. So I thought that was a very thoughtful comment. And so thought I would throw that out there. Yeah, that's all I have. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Any other comments or questions? On the fire hydrants, I think there was I don't know what we've done lately, but in the past we have done, we've done them kind of in certain number every month or certain number every 6 months. And I don't know if that's kept up. We did a pretty extensive test of them, I know, 3 or 4 years ago, I believe. Didn't we? Yeah.
That's correct. And most of that is headed by the water department. So they will go out, and we've been trying to work recently just kind of figuring out what our role is going to be, with that. But most of the actual testing of water flow and all of that, that's through the water.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I too think this is a great display format you have here, and it does. I know it takes some work to draw stuff out of the software, the raw data, and turn it into presentable product like this. But this is this is excellent, I think. So I think we stick with it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Is there any public comment on this report from those in attendance or online?
Yes, Tina Dickinson.
Ms. Dickinson. Hello, Ms. Dickinson, we can't hear you. Maybe your sound is off. Your audio on?
It shows it's on.
We'll wait a few more seconds and have to move on. Okay, I guess we'll have to pass. Yeah, there might be some problem with the audio, but thank you for trying, and hopefully we can hear from you later. That's all, I guess. Chief Berkey, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Good report. Thank you very much. Dr. Dean.
May I take a minute to thank Commander McDonald?
Yes, I was thought, I was surprised to hear he wasn't going to be back. So yeah,
for his.
Yeah, you do.
Thank you so much for all the time you have spent with us and all the excellent reports, and you will be missed.
Thank you. I'm not good with goodbyes, so I was going to kind of let it just. but just so that you know, next month, Sergeant Trevor Shipman will be here to provide a report. And then for January, Commander Hank Abbas will be taking my desk. And you'll be in very good hands with him. And then I also refreshed my recollection on that carjacking. That circumstance was two individuals known to each other. One of the individuals uses the vehicle frequently with permission. And on that particular day, the owner of the vehicle decided he didn't want, his associate to take the vehicle, and objected to him taking it. But in the final analysis, when he was asked to get out of the car, he did. So there was no crime of carjacking that happened. It was just an argument over whether or not he should drive off in the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And so it was more of an argument and a disturbance. And in fact, there was no underlying criminal behavior that occurred in that incident.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And are you retiring or moving up?
I'm retiring after 30 years with the Sheriff's Office.
Well, congratulations. Okay. Enjoy yourself.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You guys take care.
I did want to say, just in response to your report on the non-carjacking, is really that's why we have you and other sheriff's deputies and officials come here for these reports, because a lot of stuff gets out on social media, which sounds a lot lurid than it really is. And it's really good to get the facts. And it's one reason we've had you and we'll have your successors here.
Sure.
It really is useful.
No, absolutely.
Get these reports. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really follow the Nextdoor apps or things like that, mm-hmm. but sometimes my wife will inform me of things going on in our community. And it's like, I read every crime report that comes through.
Right. It's natural for people.
No one's telling us about it.
Get a little bit excited about stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Take care and happy holidays.
Thank you. You too. Move on, I guess, now to the actual item 7A of regular business. We had public comment with we had tried to get Tina in there. Yeah, this is 7A of regular business. I'll turn it over to General Manager McElhenney.
Thank you, President Gray. Agenda item 7A, discussion and consideration of water and sewer chargers appeal for Mr. and Mrs. Jim.
Wait, I'm sorry about that. I was told I skipped public comment. Yeah, I was thinking of something else. We'll wait on that a little bit. I want to have the session for public comment. This is for comment on things that are not on the agenda, but are under our purview. Anyone here in attendance want to comment on any item that's not on the agenda? Anybody online?
Yes, Tina Dickerson.
Ms. Dickerson.
Okay, can you hear me?
We can.
Oh, great. Okay, so my comment is related to, I believe, what was on the agenda last week. And I find it very, very difficult to believe that after the August 22 trash rate increase, which was humongous, that Mission Country is asking for significant rate increases from 2025 through 2031. Excuse me.
I hate to interrupt. That is on the agenda today. So,
on today's agenda?
Yeah, it is.
I thought it was last week when you had the representative here.
No,
representative last week.
It's on 7F. Is the actual
This is in relationship to last week's agenda item.
Well, it's the same topic though, so I think we should take it up at the appropriate time.
I can't speak on last week's agenda item where the rep, where somebody was there from Mission Country.
It's the same topic.
Why not?
It's the same topic.
What do you mean? Is he here again today to do another presentation?
Well, we're doing. I guess I'm saying we're doing the results of that presentation, the outcome of that presentation we're going to be discussing today, as a agenda item, an action item for initiating the Prop 218 process, and we're dealing with the actual outcome of that process that was presented last week. So it would be duplicative, I think. And you gently, you'll definitely have opportunity to comment on item 7F.
And President Gray, we muted her.
Oh, we did?
Mrs. Okay. Dickinson.
Thank you. Okay. Sorry about that, everybody. Anybody else online?
No.
Okay, yes. Just to clarify if a topic is taken up, is on our agenda, even though it's been on a previous agenda in, you know, maybe slightly different, you know, title or something like that. You know, it's important to keep public comment, non-agenda public comment on items that are, you know, not have public comment on agenda items today in this site, in this part of the agenda. So that was why I you know, put the brakes on that. Okay, nothing personal. We'll now move to 7F. No, I'm sorry, 7A. And over to Mr. McElhaney.
Right. Agenda item 7A, discussion and consideration of a water and sewer charges appeal for Mr. and Mrs. Jim and Linda Nelson at 2115 Spencer Street. A little bit of background. This is an appeal of my decision to not waive the fees for a water leak that at the time was around $14,000, $973.14. After a $2,000 payment. There is details in the municipal code here in the agenda. I won't read that, but I'll give a little bit of background discussion. On March 15th of 2024, Mr. and Mrs. Nelson were billed $16,834.19 for 595 units, approximately 445,000 gallons of water used in the January-February 2024 cycle. That was a 60-day billing period. This translates to 7,416 gallons per day, or approximately 5.15 gallons per minute. On March 21st, staff reread the meter and spoke to Mr. Nelson. We advised to seek out a plumber to look for areas of water loss, ensuring the shutoff valve and influent to the house was in the off position, went away, and purchasing a flume device after that major leak. To our knowledge, Mr. Nelson only followed our guidance in terms of shutting off the water and not installing a flume device. On July 3rd, the sewer portion of the bill was adjusted by myself because I have done that in the past where I adjust the sewer charges, and that was for $753.13. Again, Mr. Nelson put down a $2,000 deposit when we met about this water leak this water bill, and agreed not to shut off his water while he pursued the appeal process. In the meanwhile, between this period of time, a new Badger meter was installed with AMI capabilities, advanced metering infrastructure abilities. We sent off the old water meter to be bench tested, and it was found to be within 1% plus or minus accuracy. So the meter itself was not an issue. We have a timeline here with the evidence and all the different dates in which we engaged Mr. Nelson. Subsequently, in October, the AMI water meter caught a second leak that was identified, and that was on the property's, the owner's side of the meter. So with that, our recommendation is that the appeal be denied, and we'll turn it over to the board, obviously, for your guidance.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. McElhaney. Because this is an appeal of particular people asking us for relief, I want to know if Mr. Reed or Mr. or Mrs. Nelson are here, because I want to give them a chance to speak at this point, if you want to. Yes. Mm-hmm.
afternoon. Thank you for hearing us. My name's Russ Reed. I'm an attorney. I've been in town here for over 30 years. I'm a ratepayer, CCSD ratepayer. I'm going to let my client speak to you. His credibility is, I think you ought to hear it, as opposed to mine, argument. So what I'd like to do is have him come up and present his side. I'd like to move a chair right here so I can respond. Is that all right with you?
That's no problem.
Okay. So I'll have him come up and then I'll fill in the blanks.
Yeah. So Mr. Nelson? Yeah. Mr. Nelson.
Welcome. I'm James Nelson. I thank you for letting me talk to you. As you well know, we live at 2115 Spencer. We spend approximately all summer here, and then occasionally, so we're here about 50% of the time. Other than the summer, though, it's in short blocks like this week. My wife and I are both 77 years old, in relatively good health. I do have a heart condition, which makes me dizzy and somewhat anxious. So forgive me if I don't speak as eloquently as I did when I was a younger person. This financial issue is a burden to us. You know, at this age, we thought we would have plenty of money. And in relatively speaking, compared to most of the population of this country, we probably do. But this inflation that we've been experiencing in this country, and I think the world, is significant to us, and it cuts into our ability to live our lifestyle the way we'd like to. So to pay this bill, it is a burden, and we will have to borrow money against our retirement to do it. So if I may, Mr. McElhaney, am I pronouncing that correctly? Summarize the approximately 450,000 gallons of water that was calculated by the meter during the period of January and February, which is interesting because prior to that, we'd had normal water usage. And after that, March and April, we had, by the way, during the January and February, we were here 0 days. Okay, the water, our water valve was open, but we were here 0 days. During the next period, March and April, we were here 0 days, and we had one unit of water. So we went from 595 units of water usage to one unit of water usage in one flip of the switch, if you will. I think it's interesting to note that calculate the 595 units, dividing it by 60 is approximately 7,000 gallons of water a day. I'm a semi-retired general contractor. I've owned a plumbing division in much larger things than homes. And so I have a little knowledge, probably enough to be dangerous, but I have a little knowledge of plumbing. And I find it very hard to believe that we could have had a leak of 7,000 gallons a day. Also, what's really strange, if you think about it, is that there was no excessive water use in the months prior to this, and there was no excessive units of water used in the next few months. And I'll just quickly recite those. March and April, one unit. May and June, 5 units. We were here 45 days, July and August, 10 units. And we recently got the bill for September and October, and we were here exactly 16 days. And the bill was 5 units of water. So it appears that we have a really variable amount of water being run through that meter, if the meter is accurate, from 995 units to as little as one the same month. You have to take into consideration that if there was a leak or a usage of that 595 during that 60-day period, if you, it's pretty hard to believe that on the first day of January and the last day of February, we had equal amount of water usage when we were not here. It would seem if there was a disastrous leak that it would be in some time in the middle, but not at the exact first day and the exact last day. We did, I got a call from Mr. Reed this morning, and he said, go down and please go down and turn off your water and see if the meter's moving. It is not. Now, we did get a notice that the meter was changed because of that 10 units of water, I'm sorry, the 5 units of water in September and October, which nobody was here, sorry, we were here 16 days, was excessive and they changed the meter. So there's some indication that the staff realized or thought there was something awry with the meter. Basically, I think that's what I have to say.
Well, thank you. I guess we'll, first of all, we'll have some, any board members want to ask questions, we'll ask you questions, and then you and Mr. Reed, and then we'll have public comment, and we'll come back for discussion. First of all, yes, Director Dean first.
Okay, you said you were not here at all in January and February?
Not here at all, 0 days in January and February.
Does anyone else have access to your home when you're not here?
Well, I do have some other comments about that. I do have a person that comes on site every week and just checks the house and like that. And one of the comments that I've glossed over was that when I met with the community service board, they suggested that one of three things might happen. One, there was a running toilet. So I had a plumber come up after we were notified of this, and he could find no leaks and no running toilets. I had him come up a second time, and we looked at the toilets, and they're very efficient toilets. They actually printed on the toilet, it says 1 gallon per flush, which is unusually high, because I think the standard today is 1.7 gallons is the minimum that you can have. So we did a calculation on that. And if that toilet was running wide open, we would have used 172,800 gallons of water with that one toilet, not 445,000 gallons, approximately one third of that. Now, the comments the staff made was that we may have had a leak between the water meter and the shutoff valve, which is approximately 20 feet. Now, we could find a leak, and as I expressed earlier, I have a little bit of knowledge of plumbing and water and like that. And if there had been a leak in that water line, it would have found its least resistance. In other words, it would have flowed down the hill toward the water meter because my lot is fairly steep, and so the water meter is down below. So that water would have flowed down that way and filled the water meter bucket. Now, as I said, I was there both when I first came up here and this morning, and that water meter bucket is totally dry. So it doesn't appear to me that that's a reasonable answer. Also, that's an awful lot of water to go out of a leaking deal. The third thing that was said to me was that perhaps you left on a hose bib. Well, the hose bib is exactly next to the water shutoff. And as I said, I have a person that comes up once a week to check. And we also have cameras that show he's there. And we have cameras to show if the lot. So we would, if there was an excessive amount of water running down the hill, we would see it in the camera. None of these things occurred. So,
yeah. Thank you. Any other questions, Director Dean? Yeah. At the moment, yes. Anyone else have questions of Mr. Nelson or Mr. Reed?
Oh, I have.
Maybe you should add, yeah, please add them now, because we'll move on to further discussion. Thank you very much.
Why don't you take that? A couple points I want to make to clarify the staff report, which I think contains some vagueness. First of all, no one has ever seen a leak on the property. Staff went to the property in February, and they were right next to the meter and right next to the hose bib out front. They saw no leak in the hose bibs. There's no evidence of a leak underneath his home, and he's got, you know, a raised floor on one side of it right next to the water meter. There's no evidence of any leak. So my first point is no one has ever seen a leak on this property. Second, the only thing it could be is an underground leak, but if it was an underground leak, it would have continued to leak. And after February, it stopped for a period of time, even though they were in the property for 15 days. So how could an underground leak just stop and then start again? Third point, when staff finally replaced the meter, the problem stopped. Replaced the meter, the problem stopped. You checked it this morning, the meter is not misreading anything. So that tells you what the problem here is. My best thinking on this is water never flowed through that meter in the amount of 445,000 gallons a minute. And the problem was clearly the meter, because once the meter was replaced, problem was fixed. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we go on, we're going to make it back to Mr. McElhenney. He might have some comments. Then we'll go to public comment and come back to the board.
Just a small area of clarification. Yeah. When we did replace the meter with the AMI system, that system itself is what caught the second leak. So there's some discrepancies there in Mr. Reed's statement. But
yeah, thank you.
I don't think there's a discrepancy there. All I'm saying is the water problem is fixed at this point.
Yeah.
And the only thing that changed is the meter.
Okay. Thank you. Anything more?
No.
I mean, no more questions. I guess I'll open this to public comment at this point. Is there anybody in attendance who wants to comment on this issue? Mr. Howell, please come forward.
This is definitely a difficult problem. If there was a leak, was the leak the fault of the property owner? Was there some issue other than that? And as I see it, the question is, someone has to bear the cost of the missing water. Should it be the property owner? Should it be the district, which means us? Or should there be some kind of division? And what in hearing everything that I've said that has been said, the one question I have before we go forward, it seems to me it would be well to consider, there have been instances of water theft in the past, without naming names, but I have had discussions with the previous general manager. So it is possible that there was a water theft. So I think unless we can rule that out with some degree of certainty, it's probably reasonable that the community and the property owner should probably bear equal cost on that. It doesn't sound, from what I'm hearing, as though it is really the property owner's fault, but we don't really know for sure. Anyway, I just wanted to raise those issues, particularly the issue of water theft. It's, even though no one saw anyone stealing water, can we be sure that there wasn't theft? Or at least to the point where we can, in all conscience, then charge this property owner for the entire bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Howell. Anyone else in attendance? Just a moment. Mr. Nelson, just before you go on, I want to see if there's anybody else online commenting.
Yes, Christina Galloway.
Yeah, Christina Galloway. Before you go on, there's an online comment. Ms. Galloway?
Oh, hi. I think just as somebody who obviously knows very little about this situation, my gut just says, what stops every other Cambrian from claiming that their water use wasn't their water use. Not to say that that's necessarily what's happening in this situation, but I think it's just a dangerous road to go down when you start talking about like water theft as a kind of explanation for increase, no matter how little or large in someone's water use. So just as a citizen, that starts to sound a little concerning to me. So that's my two cents, and thank you.
Thank you. Briefly, you, Mr. Nelson, Mr. Reed, want to respond to something? Yeah. Okay.
Only thing I'd like.
Yep.
Our attorney asked me not to contradict that. I'm not going to contradict the possibility of a water theft. But I would like to say that having been in the construction business for, I hate to admit it, 51 years, a truckload, at least a truckload of gas, used to be 7,000 gallons. Now, what it is today, I truly don't know. But it's somewhere between 7,000 and 10,000 because of the weight limits on highways today. So if it was a water theft, that it would have to be stolen 7,000 gallons every day.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Director Dean, you have a comment? Thank you very much.
Yes, I believe that Mr. Nelson said that he had cameras on his home. And did he see anyone other than those authorized to access his home, approach his home via those cameras? And then I have something else.
Yeah, please.
My wife is almost addicted to the cameras. Because we have so many wild animals, and she's a real animal lover, and so we have all these animals. So she's constantly saying, the thing dings, and we see, and this goes on all the time, except when we're sleeping. So the answer is no.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Dr. Dean?
Yeah. Okay, I see in the documents provided to us that the meter was removed and tested, and was tested accurate between plus or minus 0%. I did some research on water meters because something was mentioned in one of these letters that there's a possibility that our meter skipped ahead. And so I researched how a water meter works. And the turbine flows based on the water going through it. And if there is an error at all, the error has been to the favor of the resident because the calcium deposits, the mineral deposits on that turbine caused it to read low, not high. And from what I researched, it is impossible for this type of meter to jump ahead. So just wanted to comment on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Dean.
You can be seated now, Mr. Nelson. So I'm going to turn this over to board discussion. Mr. McElhaney.
Just correct in confirming what Director Dean said is it's almost universally in favor of the consumer with a failing meter, which is why we did our due diligence to replace the meter with an AMI meter, bench test that meter. And then in closing, I just want to say that I empathize with Mr. Nelson, as I have with several of our community members. And obviously, this is one of the largest bills we've ever seen. But our decision was based on remaining consistent and fair to all the community members. And I have, in fact, denied other requests for relief of various different costs. Yeah. And so that is why we're bringing it before the board for discussion.
I would caution Mr. Nelson and Mr. Reed, we're not going to get into an argumentative situation.
Short thing.
Yeah, because we have to discuss this, the five of us. So, yeah.
I have contacted plumbers in town here. And there have been incidents over the last 20 or 25 years of meters not working. So you can bring in anybody, but there have been incidents of it.
Thank you. Okay, I'll turn this over to the board for discussion. And
I have questions of him.
I'm sorry. Vice President Scott had a question for Mr. Reed or Mr. Nelson. So sorry about that. Please come up again.
Thank you so much. I was going to ask a question about the camera. That would have made sense. So when was it that the meter got replaced?
Let me look at the staff report quickly so I can get an accurate.
And then I'm wondering why you didn't get a flume when that was recommended to you. You know what a flume would do? A flume would catch something like this quickly.
Well, first off, it didn't occur to me, even though they recommended it. I was going through my heart issue and in and out of the hospital and like that. So it was not high on my priority list. And the fact is that the water after this bill was never excessive. You know, if we were talking about 10 units of water versus one unit of water, I'd have just paid the bill. Talking about 595 units in January and February and March and April, one unit. That's not realistic.
Yeah.
Vice President Scott, that was October 7th. There was a new meter,
right,
3/4 inch with new register endpoints, AMI endpoints.
Okay. Any more questions, Director Scott?
Yes.
Vice President Scott.
So I have to tell you, my bills are high and they're high because, we do a lot of watering, in our yard. Do you have anyone who maybe has done any work around your place or your garden? Is there been a change in how you water your garden or anything like that?
We have no grass. It's a small lot. It's landscaped in a manner of water, minimal water usage, a few plants, mostly rock, mostly gravel. So the short answer to your question is no. We do not. Again, though, I keep coming back to that 595 units. You know, when there was nothing before that and nothing after that.
Well, yeah, we get that. I think we'll discuss that, why that in context. Yeah, Director Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Nelson. And what Vice President Scott asked brings to mind another question. I thought we haven't asked since you purchased the property, I assume a year and a half ago. Has there been any construction activity?
Painting, some minor detailing of wood putting across the front to give it more of a modern look. Other than plumbing, zero, nothing that would cause a water leak.
Thank you. Dr. Farmer, do you have a question?
Thank you, President Gray. Thank you, Mr. Nelson, Mr. Reed, for being here today. Mr. Nelson, especially since it was indicated to us that you probably wouldn't be here because of your health issues. So
I wish. Sorry, I can't hear you. I'm very deaf.
It's not a problem. What I said was, Mr. Nelson, Mr. Reed, I appreciate you both being here today. Mr. Nelson, we didn't anticipate you being here because of your health issues, so I want to wish you all the best in that regard.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not done.
I'm sorry.
So one of the things that you were speaking about earlier, and I'd appreciate you bringing up this information that you provided, was telling us the times that you have been here and the times you haven't been here. And what you indicated was there was a period of time where you used five units and you were here, you and your wife were present. And then I think it was during the summer, July and August, you used 10 units and you were here at that time as well. So it appears that the times that you've been here, water has been used and you agree to that. It appears when you haven't been here, other than this period in question, no water has been used, which would lead me to believe that the meter is working correctly, because when you're here, water usage is up. And when you're not here, there isn't any water usage. Now, how it happened that this 2-month period, something very strange took place. However, what's indicated in every other period of usage that the meter is working correctly. So how it would be working incorrectly for this 2-month period and then be correct the rest of the time doesn't register to me. Now, finding the reason that this took place, I'm not so sure that we can do that. But what is indicated to me by the information that you've provided that something actually did happen with regard to water usage.
I don't know that really makes a comment. I agree with what he just
said. Yeah. Okay. I had a question. But just before board discussion, I had one question about when you mentioned construction going on at the house when you were gone.
No.
Okay. I want to make sure of that. Yeah. We are ready for board discussion now. And I can take whoever wants to start. Thank you. Director Thomas.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. And the comments, the volume of water and the comments about trucks, this would be 60 to 70 truckloads of water. So it very clearly, this is not a water theft situation. To the previous point, when there's some appliance within the house running water, you don't know it until you know it. I've got experience with that. And when it stops running water, no one ever sees it. So again, there's no, it would never be a smoking gun in a situation like this. Shortly after moving here 7 years ago, I saw this crazy offer from the CCSD. I didn't know what the CCSD was. That was our water bill. And there was an encouragement to procure a flume. I was like, what? So I read about it and I thought, well, heck yes. So as soon as I saw that offer, I jumped on that, had a flume installed. One of the easiest installations. I'm fairly mechanically inclined, but it was very easy. A while later, we were actually in Indiana. Keep the long story short, but due to situations in Europe, my son could not, he was in the military and couldn't get to Indiana. So my wife and I got on the plane and went house hunting for them on their house hunting list. And lo and behold, I get an alarm on my iPhone. I look at it and there were several alarms, the 15 minute, the 30 minute, the 1 hour alarm. And I thought, well, what is this flume? I look and I keep looking and holy smokes, when I look at the chart, water's running. And I'm like, what I do? But fortunately, I had been had made a lot of friends from volunteering at Fiskalina Ranch Preserve. I call one of them and said, can you please come turn off the water? And he comes by and shuts the water off. And thank goodness. And I don't remember exactly the number, but it was about an hour and a half that I could get somebody at the house. There was a lot of water flowing. I assume it was going down a toilet that had been running. Point being, boy, that flume saved us. And two, you don't know when water's running unless you just walk by and hear it. Given that there's no visual evidence on the exterior, it sounds like this water was running down an appliance of some sort. So I appreciate the generosity of our general manager waiving the wastewater treatment charges, because from everything I read, it did go down into the collection system. The other perspective I wanted to share, I spent a couple of decades in the pipeline industry, and I've got extensive experience with positive displacement meters. And it is as Director Dean described, it doesn't happen that more registers through a meter than actually flows. It's one of those physical, it's like this iPhone floating up. It would be defying the laws of physics. It doesn't happen. But it's so when there is wear or deterioration in a meter, the meter stops registering, and so the errors would always be in the customer's favor. And so what we would do is run a flow test through that meter, and that's what staff did, indicating that the meter was registering accurately. That's my observations and comments.
Yeah, thank you very much. Anybody else have any comment for discussion purposes? I have actually a little insight, or not insight so much, but picking up on what Director Thomas is talking about, I also have a flume, and it's a wonderful device because it simply strap it to your meter, very simple to install, and it hooks up to a Wi-Fi connection to the cell network, so you can get it anywhere in the world. I think what we have to do as a board, we have to do a rule out process of what it could be. And I think we talked a little bit about theft, and I agree that the distill this much water, which is like more than an acre foot, size of several dozen backyard swimming pools, you would need a fleet of trucks that would attract a lot of attention. I think that's not a plausible scenario. A meter running in reverse is not plausible. It just doesn't happen. I think we have to assume that water flowed through that meter, and the meter itself was checked for accuracy. So nothing was wrong with the meter. I'll share you a little story that I went through here back in the day when water was much cheaper, fortunately, about 20 years ago, where I had a weekend house, a part-time house, and we had just installed a toilet. And we, just before we left, someone used the toilet, just walked out, toilet was filling up. Didn't think about it. 10 days later, we come back there and it's still running. And when the toilet is not a toilet running, I think the one thing has to be pointed out is not just it's not the water flowing through the toilet in the normal way. It's the water that flows into the tank when the valve doesn't close. And that water is at a high volume. If you ever notice how fast a toilet fills up, it's like 5 gallons a minute at least, maybe 10. And that water was running, and it ran for 10 days. And it was a bill at the time, an extremely high bill, like probably several hundred dollars. This is when water was much, much cheaper than it is now. And I realized how that could happen. We just hadn't thought about it. And, a toilet, I think, to me, there's only one culprit it probably could be, is something like that. That would have to have been inside the house because, Dr. Thomas noted, there's no sign anywhere outside of a leak. And it had to be something that I think happened. Somebody used a toilet just before he left. It was filling up and didn't think about it and, went back home. I can't think of any other solution. The problem is that if the answer is that it was in the house and it was the appliance owned by the customer causing the problem, the customer is liable for the charge, I think. It's hard to get around that because there was no other external solution, no other external factor or whatever. I noticed that, and it's a very, it's a heart, it's a lot of money, and I really get that. We had the opportunity, we had the option rather, of extending the payments to some degree. And I could maybe recommend that as a course of action, but I don't think it's accurate to say, we don't have the justification for saying that it was something other than water flowing through that meter that was measured. And there had to be some leak downstream of the meter at the property in the house. So those are my thoughts on it.
I just have one question.
Yes, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. So when the second leak was found because you changed the meter, what was that leak?
Thank you, Vice President Scott. I don't know if we determined what the leak was. We just determined there was a leak and then subsequently had the water shut off. I'll look at the timeline again, but it appears we just shut that water off and notified the property owner.
Yeah. Any other discussion? Director Dean.
Okay, well, I agree with everybody's analysis of this. There's no evidence of an exterior leak. There's no evidence of any theft. The water obviously went through the meter. The meter was not defective. It's not fair to the rest of the community that this not be paid for. Perhaps we can consider, if possible, allowing him to make payments on this. But based on all of the testimony we have heard, and all of this discussion, I move that we not accept the appeal that we have this bill paid for.
Okay, thank you. Any a second? Do I have a second to that?
I will second.
Yeah, so moving to second to that, the appeal for the water and sewer charges for Jim and Linda Nelson at 2115 Spencer Street be denied. A roll call, please.
Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Thomas?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Vice President Scott?
Aye.
President Gray?
Aye. At this point, when you know Director Dean mentioned a payment plan, that is a possibility. I think that's something that Mr. McElhenney may want to discuss with the
absolutely, President. Yeah. I'd be more than happy to discuss a payment plan. I don't know if the board has terms that they would like to see. Would rather leave that up to staff, but I'd be happy to do so.
At this point, I think if everybody's right, fine. We just leave. See what staff can arrive at, and we'll bring it back. Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for coming and making your case. And we understand this is a painful thing, but we do have to be fair to all our users. And water is a very, very serious thing here in Cambria, as you know. So we can work things out at the payment level. I'm going to, sure, please.
On a payment plan. I didn't understand what the comment was on.
We have the option of spacing payments out over a period of time.
Giving me that option?
What? Well, you can discuss that with, the staff will be discussing that with
you'll
you.
Get back.
Mr. Nelson, I'll reach out to you. Yeah. I have one of our staff members working on different terms and breakdowns on payment plan per month.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So we turn to the agenda, the order of the agenda. So the manager reports and then move on because it's a consent agenda, but manager reports first, and this would be general manager's report. Mr. McElhenney.
Thank you, President Gray. As stated in my manager's report, we did get back our quarterly biological reports, which are ongoing, basically AMP monitoring reports for the WRF. Mr. Merck's report came back and showed essentially healthy stream flows and pools that are thriving with different aquatic life and species. And so that is a good thing. These are quarterly reports that are done for AMP monitoring. And at some point we had been doing it once a month, which was a little bit of overkill because we're not actually operating the WRF. So we switched to quarterly reports. It's kind of a status quo biological monitoring against our adaptive management plan protocol. But those are in, and we're working with Mr. Green on a potential RFP for future biological monitoring. If the coastal development permit, the permanent coastal development permit moves through the process and we eventually are able to permanently permit that, we will have different types of scope for that biological monitoring during periods in which it's operational. So more to come on that. On the discussion of the coastal development permit for the water reclamation facility, I did add in my community letter and here in the staff report, the specific processes that occur at the county level when submitting these permit applications. And I'm happy to answer any questions to those, but gives a little bit of idea the steps involved with the community and what we will be doing throughout those steps and keeping the community aware. Currently, we are gathering data from the information hold that was compiled by the county from feedback from the Coastal Commission and County Roads. The rest of the stakeholders that are listed, we haven't received any feedback from them as of yet. That doesn't mean that it won't come. There could be several more requests throughout this process, but information holds, as mentioned in last week's board meeting, standard, and we are expecting them. A lot of the information hold items that the Coastal Commission is requesting and the county is requesting on behalf of the Coastal Commission is part of the scope that SWCA is working on. We have a 90-day window to respond to that. We're probably about 30 days in, if not maybe 40 days into that window. So we still have some time left to answer that. SWCA is working on a lot of those things, EIR addendum, AMP update. When we have those and we have all of those questions answered, we will submit
all of that information to the county at one time. So when we talk about submitting everything at one time, we're talking about responses to the information hold. And so when that is ready, of course, I'll update the community through community letters and blast outs and GM reports. Moving on, as usual, we'll have the meet the GM on November 25th from 8:30 in the morning until 7. And I always welcome the community to come in and ask these types of questions if there's if they have any questions of our operations. And with that, I'll turn it over to the board for any questions.
Okay, thank you. Yes, any questions of a general manager? Dr. Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray and general manager. It would be useful when the timing is appropriate to hear from Merck and Associates, the two data points, in the AMP monitoring. Sound reasonable to me, but I'm not experienced in this area. But it would be good to have an explanation from our scientists explaining how the number of samples and observations they're taking enables a representative sample.
Absolutely. That's a great point that I failed to bring up. I did speak with Mr. Merck, and he would be happy to come by and explain his processes. We're targeting probably springtime for something like that. Mm-hmm. He did give me a little explanation about what he's doing according to his biological monitoring, according to AMP protocols. So his guiding book is the AMP itself. And then there's a lot of community members have made comments about how much time he spent observing red-legged frogs or tidewater gobblies. That's not really the protocol that the AMP has lined up for him in terms of his scope of monitoring. Those type of monitoring procedures, when you talk about specific species, really line up with, for instance, let me turn my page here. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service actually has a guide on site assessments and field surveys for the red-legged frog. And then from there, it'll tell you exactly how much time needs to be spent observing that one species. And so their guidance recommends a total of up to 8 surveys to determine the presence of the red-legged frog, 2-day surveys, 4-night surveys. So you can see it's really focused on that species, mm-hmm, rather than the protocol in which the AMP is focused on, which is stream health, stream bed flows, pools, things of that nature. So again, his is guided towards the AMP protocol and our adaptive management plan. But after speaking with him, he'd be happy to show up and give that type of discussion and break down the difference between assessing certain species and targeting those species and only looking at that versus the AMP protocol, if that makes sense. And so we'll work on scheduling that.
Yeah, thank you, General Manager McElhaney, because it does make a lot of sense. If you're looking for where the water is distributed in the stream bed, it doesn't take long to see that. Yeah.
Any other questions? I'll open this to public comment. We have one speaker slip, Christine Heinrichs.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Christine Heinrichs from Cambria. General Manager McElhaney praises the biological reports supporting the district's EWS, SWF, WRF coastal development permit application. They're actually based on 2 observations for 2 hours. In August and in October, they didn't see much. I asked the board to invite Mr. Merck, whose company performed these observations and wrote the report, to come to a public meeting to explain how these 2 brief observations can form the basis of an adaptive management plan for threatened species. The Coastal Commission in its letter also questioned whether there is adequate baseline data to write an adaptive management plan. Mr. Merck's original contract with the district specified spending 153 hours over 4 months on the biological assessments. When was this contract changed? In response to repeated inquiries, Mr. McElhaney has claimed that biological observations were ongoing, but this report cites none before the single one in August 2024. 2 observations do seem like the minimum on which to claim baseline biological data that forms the basis for adaptive management. Biologists saw some tidewater gobies, but no steelhead or red-legged frogs. The Coastal Commission references concern about the lack of baseline data in its letter It also mentions a lack of any meeting of the Technical Advisory Committee in more than a year. When will this committee be convened to review the project description and in-stream flow study? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else present here want to comment on this topic, on this report? Is there any comment online?
Yes, Tina Dickerson.
Go ahead, Ms. Dickerson.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. I'm having great difficulty with the incredible amount of lack of transparency, especially from the general manager to the board. When I received the WRF information hold, the long list of to-dos, and then the comments from the Coastal Commission, I called Mr. McElhaney, and I asked him if he had shared this information with the board, because three directors that I contacted said that he had not. And he told me that he'd shared it with the ad hoc committee. Now, since the ad hoc committee, we've hired SWCA to be dealing with this CDP issue. And so I didn't see really the relevance of just the supposed ad hoc committee. But what I'm getting really sick and tired of is, how many years do you have to look at Coastal Commission's comments, the public's comments, various agencies' comments, and you still can't get it right? You still don't understand what it is that you need to do. And it is costing ratepayers millions more for this. Your
audio is breaking up a little bit. Ms. Dickerson, your audio is breaking up. We're having trouble hearing you.
That has yet to see the light of day.
Can you hear us? We're having trouble hearing you.
I think, you know, please.
I'm sorry, but the last 30 seconds or so, we can't really, we haven't been able to hear most of what you said because you're breaking up. Do you hear us?
Understand that the ratepayers has paid for every single study, every single consultant, for engineers, and yet Mr. McElhaney cannot share the information that comes from. Can you hear me now?
Tina, we couldn't hear you for about the last 40 seconds.
That I don't know.
Was it AGP's problem? Or?
No, it's something to do with her.
But I would appreciate, can you hear me now?
We can hear you now.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Yeah, I can hear you.
They're hearing you, yes.
Do you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yes, Tina, they can hear you.
Yeah, it must be something on this end with the network.
Okay, yeah, so
yeah.
You need to, if it's on your end, if it's on your end, you need to deal with it. I'll give you 30 more seconds if you want to repeat anything, but we did miss a lot of what you said.
Yeah, but can you hear me now?
Yes, so maybe wind up, you know.
I'm sorry, I have no idea what the problem is.
Okay.
So my problem is that the. Okay, are you hearing? You're talking.
Yeah,
I'm trying to
speak
to you, but you're telling me you can't hear me.
You're breaking up.
I just want to say that when I have something to say, President Gray, and I did have more in public manager, I've never seen that happen before. Well, the time.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry about that, but there's a problem somewhere in the transmission. So, I don't think we're having problems with anyone else coming in here, but yeah. Ms. Dodson, is there anybody else online?
No.
Okay, thank you. Continue with the reports. This is, the next one will be Facilities and Resources Manager, Mr. Aguirre. Oh, wait a second. I'm sorry. Well, just before you get up, Director Farmer wanted to make a comment.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment. I'm hoping that in the very near future, and perhaps I know we're only having one meeting in December, but I'm hoping that we can have an agenda item where Mr. Merck is present so members of the board can maybe pursue some concerns that we might have.
Yeah, thank you. I think Gentleman, Mr. McElhinney mentioned March or April, or perhaps earlier.
I can work on it in either direction.
Okay.
President Gray.
That's good.
If you'd like it sooner than later, I know we're going to have some more quarterly monitoring. So I don't know if you want to look at another quarterly report or if you want to review the old one, but
okay.
Happy to do
that. We'll be taking up an agenda review, I think, or also agenda reviews for future agendas, that process. Okay, Mr. McGeary, thank you. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you, Mr. President and board and staff. So we can do that one at the end. So with the admin office, we went ahead and the crew and myself, we turned around and we ended up cleaning everything up, doing what we can in the transition of the move to the new location. This was currently the old location that we turned around and did extensive cleaning. And during that time, we ended up moving the drop box, which is down there on the in slope there to the parking lot. Just to put that out there. I know it's been kind of confusion where we were going to put it and stuff. So we ended up finding a location there. I believe everything went well. I know we got a good feedback from the office and stuff of that nature that we ended up doing our diligence to make sure our previous landlord was pretty happy with everything that we ended up doing. So there's been very little activity with the encampments that's been going on around town. We did end up picking up quite a bit there. They're off of Highway 1. Caltrans was out there doing some movement, some vegetation moving, removal. They have a new supervisor in that department, so we went ahead and more or less assisted with the issues that were going on over there. We have removed quite a bit. It was roughly about in two loads. There's roughly about 2,800 pounds. So that's how much we've already pulled out of there. And our department has been maintaining it. We haven't been contracting out with any of that, doing our diligence. And our guys, like I said before, we are still out patrolling. So we are getting a grasp of it, trying to slow everything down. And that's the main thing. We're trying to make sure that they're still moving around within, 2 to 3 weeks. So that way there's not as abundance of material that's being left behind. A lot of it has to do with the creek beds and stuff of that nature. It's flowing down that. And that's where we try to catch it before it even gets there. So with the boardwalk here, we've been working, with the Fiscalini Ranch, stuff like that, trying to get everything situated with the new boardwalk. As you can tell, there's been a couple areas where we turn around and dissed. Basically, I ripped it all up. We still have quite a few different people out there that are walking along the old trail. So one of the things I'm working with Brian Morgan with the FFRP trail division is turning around and ripping it all out. So our guys will be out there with them as time goes on to clear up all that so it looks more of a natural habitat once it all turns to start coming back in after this winter. That's our main concern with that there. We're going to turn around and rough it up once everything softens up because that dirt is pretty hard. It's pretty miraculous when going through with the tractor and it's stalled the tractor once. So, yeah. Okay, the next. This one here, what we've been doing, we've been cleaning out culverts, redoing drainages. This one here was actually off of a Piney Court up there at the top of Berry Trail. We went ahead and cleaned that out. There's been quite a few flooding to where it's going into the customer's residence, into their driveway. So I turned around and had the guys go out with one of the to-do list that we have for culverts. So they went out and they turned around, assessed it, pulled it all out, cleaned it. And then the one by the dog park where the county that goes into the yard, I was the one who turned around and dug it out and found the drainage. So that way we can actually utilize that. So that way it doesn't flood in that area. So that way, as you can tell, the wear and tear on that road gets pretty bad once it starts getting wet. What I am waiting, because I know this weekend we're supposed to be getting some rain. So I have working it out to where we're going to be getting some base, or not base, gravel. Turner coming back in after this rain. Since it's going to be soft, we're going to go ahead and scrape it and level everything out as much as we can throughout the parking lot and also on the drive into it. So that way eliminate a lot of the potholes that are currently still there, backfill it, everything of that nature. We have been monitoring different areas. I know I've been out checking different culverts in different areas just to confirm that our flow is still going pretty good and we're not going to run into any issues. In regards to the wet weather, I know I've been out to a couple different our sites, CCSD lots. It's one of the things that I am going to be having the guys do is going out and assess all the trees. I know we've had concerns with trees within our neighbors of our CCSD lots. So those are things that I am actually taking an initiative on to recognize and, you know, more or less let them be known that we're out there, double checking on things and trying to do our diligence and correcting all that before it even happens, anything happens. Okay. So here's one of the future things that I'm working with the FFRP. There's a couple areas out there on the Fiscalini Ranch. It's pretty treacherous. I know the boardwalk was a big one, Fiscalini with donations and everything else of that nature made it really, really nice. It's a real convenient piece of a bridge that they put out there, the trailheads. So with these here, as you can tell, it has the ridge trail where the truck is parked at. Mm. That one there, that's usually the access that turns around and goes across basically over to Victoria from Huntington area. So what we usually have, we always have trucks going there and they tore it up the past couple of years. So I am in the midst of ripping all that out of there, the current trail that's in, and then installing another 45 foot, 6 feet wide planks. Hmm. And we're getting some more or less some pier boards going across there. So I've been working with Brian Morgan and also Michael Thomas in regards of looking at what we could do to straighten that out and keep the public pretty dry on that area. Once it becomes wet, it will be to the degree to where there's no service vehicles whatsoever going in that area. We need to stay out of there. So talking with my staff and in the future, we're going to be doing that. The reason we're going 6 feet across there so that way if we eventually get a UTV, we'll be able to get the all-terrain vehicle inside of there, such as like a Gator or a Kubota. And it's still wide enough where we can still go across it as one or two and do small things, clear trails, stuff of that nature, and take assessments without driving in there. The next one is the Forest Loop and the Trenton Trail. That one, too, is going to be about 25 feet. We're designing it to where it goes above it, about 8 inches. So that way the water flow will go through. So that way there's less traction of people getting hurt and getting wet through there. Those are the first two projects that we're looking at. That trail there, the Forest Loop, is going to be roughly about 4 feet. We figured that one's small enough we can turn around and keep it to human foot traffic and then worst case scenario with the ATV, a little four-wheeler that we currently have within our district. I know this is going to be the first two sets. It's going to be similar to the top left. That's what it's going to be looking like once we turn around and get it done in those areas. And this is going to be the looking at the finance aspect of this one here, it is minimal. For these two bridges, it will be well below $5,000. That's something that I'm working out with the FFRP. We're negotiating on that and making it work with us since we're on a tight budget and donations and different things of that nature. So, I've been inventorying of all the concerns that we've been getting out there for the CCSD behalf. And this is, I think, the number one thing that we need to really focus on. Moving forward, we are actually looking forward to the new member. Met with him yesterday. He just basically cleared everything on his end. His name is Anthony. He's going to be, I believe there's going to be an offer going to be thrown at him here real soon. But with his knowledge and his understanding of what we do, after he's walked around and just moved to the community. Seems like he's going to be a good fit. It's one thing that we're kind of excited about, having three more or one more person on our staff. We're, our projects have gotten a little bit bigger. I've actually got a, quite a few big projects that where it does take three people and plus myself. Let's see here. Yeah, like I said, yeah. So our current member that we have right now is Eduardo. He just started barely about a month ago. He's picked up, you know, he stepped right into the boots and took off running. I know we get that phrase of, you know, the boots on the ground. This individual has stepped up with Oscar Mora, the current employee. Eduardo has done a great job. He's very... very smart when it comes to getting things done, trying to figure out how we can turn around and make it work as a team and as a unit. He is a team player, and that's the main thing. He is a native here in Cambria, and he is here. Yeah. I'd like to introduce you to him so he can come up and speak to you guys.
Hello.
Hello, Mr.
How you guys doing?
Welcome.
My name is Eduardo Chavez. Whole life. Right around 26 of 28 years. Love the community here. I've always been very welcoming. Know all the people here since little, growing up with them. So,
Well, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
And then President Gray, I just want to tack on to Mr. Geary and Lalo's work over the past few months. It was a tall ask to get us moved out of our old facilities, and obviously we know we did the budget adjustment for the potential to hire movers and get it done in a swift amount of time, and these guys they crushed it. You know, they were, you know, there, they helped us move, they helped install things at the new office. There was some slight remodeling that needed to be done to get a printer in here and there, and they've just done a phenomenal job. And then to get our old admin office back to pre-CCSD, and that's dating into the 90s, to get it back in a good respectable shape was another tall ass. So kudos to them. They did a phenomenal job. They saved the district a significant amount of money in this move. So thank you.
I know things went very smoothly, actually, and on time.
Exactly.
If you're done with your report, we can have questions from the board.
Yeah, that was everything.
Dr. Farmer.
Not a question. I just want to make a comment. Mr. Geary has been so hardworking since he's been here. And for the last couple of months, he's had some shoulder issues that have kind of limited him. I just wanted to point that out, following up on General Manager McElhaney's comments as to how hard he and his crew have been working with regard to the old office and the new office. And he's doing this under a little bit of physical stress. I just wanted to point that out. So thank you, David. Two thumbs up again, buddy.
Thank you very much. Is there any public comment on this report in the hall or online?
No.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, thank you for a job well done. And we're glad to see you're up to strength, full strength now. And so just about.
Perfect.
Thank you. Dr. Thomas.
Yeah, and thank you, President Gray. And thank you, Mr. Geary. And I'll make a brief story. I was out with the trails crew yesterday. They, you know, we're putting in the new water, you know, water erosion control features on the creek to forest trail, and you know, talking with Brian, and you know, Brian is just really singing the praises of our facilities and resources manager. He's just glowing with the kind of collaboration that he's having with you. And you know, we've got a crew of volunteers. We may only be worth a couple hours a week, but we're eager to get to work on that with you. So thanks and welcome, Lalo. Glad to have you.
Well, thanks again. Thank you very much for a good report. Up next is finance. Finance Manager's Report.
Thank you, President Gray. I have agenda item 5C, which is the Finance Manager's Report, reporting on activity for the month of October 2024. We also have in here on consent agenda the expenditure report from October. And all the cash balances and the normal items that I'm reporting on the any PG&E activity, which there was none in the month of October. Also, I wanted to report that we have a date set for the auditors to be in the district. So they will be here January 9th and 10th.
Okay.
Hopefully we're trying to get it 19, 2 days. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Thank you. Any questions from the board on this report? Any comment? Sorry. Yeah, Dr. Thomas. Sometimes it's hard to see these lights, by the way.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. And just a quick question. It's probably obvious, but the report of the Cal OES that's been there for years of the storm damage years ago, is that still there? Because we just haven't gotten the money yet. Is that why that's still there?
Correct. And I got the note that we don't need to see it in this report anymore, so I'll take it up. This preceded me, so I've just kept it on there. But yeah, these were the outstanding items from back in 2021.
Thank you. Vice President Scott.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I have a new habit. I keep the last board meeting where you have the same kind of reports. And I'm really happy to say that the total balances is not much different than it was the last time we got this report. So thank you.
Yes, we are in that time of year where our cash flow is a little, you know, we're trying to catch up. We're really not getting our property tax payments yet. So it's good that it's steady.
Yeah. Right. Thank you. If there are no further questions, and there's no public comment. Is there public comment on this issue? I mean, this report among the attendees or online?
No.
Move on to the utilities report, water and wastewater. Mr. Reaper.
Thank you, President Gray. Jim Green is at a training event and he asked me to fill in. So I'm here to give the utilities report for the month of October. We had a couple congratulations to some of our staff. Art Garney passed his grade 3 wastewater exam. And then Christian McManus received his Class A commercial license. We would also like to thank Adam Stevenson for his 7 years of service to the district. His last day was October 4th. So at the wastewater treatment plant, we had a return activated sludge pump go out, or rather the motor. So it was pulled. The replacement, the spare we keep on hand, was put in service, and then old one was sent to our repair shop in Santa Maria to be repaired. So we'll have another spare on hand. We're still experiencing issues with the screening unit clogging up with fine fiber. So I'd like to take this time to remind the public that we should only be flushing wash water, dishwater, toilet paper, and biological waste into our sewer system. Keep everything else goes in the trash can. So over the last couple of months, we've had sheep doing our weed control out at the WRF, as well as the wastewater treatment plant. The stuff at the WRF was a little drier. It took them longer. They like it a little greener, so it took them a couple of months to really chew through that. But once they came to the wastewater plant where things were greener, they actually completely mowed down the vegetation in about 3 days. It was very surprising. So they did a great job. Out in the collection system, a motor was replaced in lift station A1 due to a failing front bearing. And then just over 4,300 feet of line was cleaned via our wonderful hydrojet vacuum truck. In the water department, on Tuesday, October 22nd, there was a leak here on the Pine Dorado grounds. While they were digging to try to find the source of the leak, the already cracked pipe failed further, and it ended up being like about 100 gallon per minute leak developed. The wastewater department was called in with the big back truck to help assist. And let's see. And also to help with traffic control, we needed all that staff on hand to kind of handle that big leak. The one thing that people might not know is that down in this part of town, the water pressure is rather high. It's about 125 PSI. So the one, when you get a leak, it can leak quite a bit quite quickly, and could be kind of hard to contain. And so that was part of the issue they were having, was that it was hard to get a, with the line pressurized, it was hard to get a fitting on there to stop the leak. Eventually that evening, after the dinner rush was kind of over with the main, with the restaurants in the area, they were able to shut water service down and get it capped off. And then over the next couple of days, we worked with Kirk Construction to replace the water lines, and then also a section of main, and they, which also required relocating a hydrant. They were able to put in a new 10-inch gate valve, so should a similar leak occur, they have a means of shutting it off. Then a couple of other, they did a water line replacement on Wellington Street, a water surface upgrade on Andover Place, two other small leaks were fixed. And then on San Simeon Well number 3, we finally got the variable frequency drive, and that was installed by our electrical consultant, Tough Automation. So yeah, that was good, yeah. Due to supply chain issues, it took a while to get that, but now we're happy that that's back in service. Just a couple project updates. This on the San Simeon Well field transmission rain project, where our consultant is continuing to work on getting the encroachment permit from Caltrans for allowing potholing. This is to locate other utilities that may be in the right of way. And we also need to do potholing and digging for to get geotechnical data for the engineering design for the pipeline. And then for the community park restroom, the county got back to us with stamped updated plans with the restroom with the correct orientation, correct location. We had to do a little bit of, we moved the utilities around a little bit. So, but we had to get a new step that those changes were substantial enough that the county wanted a new to restamp the plans. So we got those in hand. I know last board meeting, the contracts were approved to allow the, for the construction to proceed. And we're expecting to break ground first week in December. And with that, I'm open to any questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Reaper. I'll start with Director Dean.
I'd like to compliment you on this report and the format of the report, especially the project status updates, because it's a lot easier to read the way that you have them in here now, and it's a lot more informative. So I appreciate that. And although I missed the watermark background, this looks really nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Dean. Director, well, Vice President Scott.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. So a couple things. I agree. The format of this report, it was made it really easier to understand, but I am going to tell you something, and I'm not going to laminate it, but on page 16, where it says no wipes down the pipes, I am going to make several copies of this. I have 4 bathrooms, and I'm going to put this in every bathroom because you company, right, during holidays. So,
very good advice, actually, on that one. Yeah, Dr. Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. And I agree. I mean, there's, I've got, you know, I think I shared in the email, but about 6 improvements. I mean, great improvements in the report. And I was really surprised on the project status report. I'm so used to seeing it by the table, and seeing it in the new format, you would expect that I would be like, oh, this is different. Well, it was like an immediate, oh, this is better. Question on page 40. So, I mean, we have rain in the forecast, so, you know, but why are our San Simeon well levels so far above the average at this point? I mean, is it the late rain we received in April? I just wonder, because we're way up there.
We are way above average. And if you, we one of the graphs is, I like it a lot because it shows the percentile, and we're even above the,
oh yeah.
Yeah, we're like in the 90th percentile for our well levels. And, I have some guesses as to why that might be. I know that the Palmer Flats area of the stream didn't stop flowing till the end of August. So that means until then we were getting replenishment in the groundwater basin. And I think we've also just, as a community, done a good job managing our demand. So I think it was a combination of a wet winter and then good demand management.
Dr. Farmer.
Yes, thank you, President Gray. So, Thank you, Tristan, for, well, everybody's already commented, so I'll pass on that. But so a couple of things with regard to the dragging issue. Have you noticed this increasing in recent months? I'm just, the fact that you're bringing it up, you know, once again. So have you noticed an increase in the problems that you're having in that area?
Not an increase, but it does seem to be persistent. Like it hasn't gone away. And so it's just a good reminder that we should be only flushing things that break right. down.
Well, it would seem to me, and especially with this really cool flyer that Vice President Scott has alluded to, I don't know how we do this, but considering more people are going to be here during the holiday season, we've probably got to figure out a way, maybe get some kids from the high school to volunteer to go and hand these out at every residence to make sure that everybody knows about this. I mean, us talking about it here and maybe putting it in a water bill I don't think is sufficient enough, all things considered. I mean, yes, some people are more responsible than others, but somehow we've got to do what we can to more seriously address this issue. That's just my take on it.
I think that's a good idea. We will look into potentially doing a public outreach campaign of some kind.
Yeah. Also, with regard to an item on page 30, water service upgrade. And this is also indicated on 37. I'll get to that in a moment. So it says here, a water service upgrade was requested and completed at 2104 Andover Place. Upgrading the water service from a 3/4 to 1 inch diameter pipe and meter was required to allow for the installation of a sprinkler system, which was required as part of a remodel / addition project. So I would just like to know, who pays for that? I mean, we're doing the work for some upgrade that's taking place at a residence. Is the person that owns that residence paying for the work that the district is doing?
That is correct. We take a $5,000 deposit and then we have them sign an agreement that says if it's more than that, they're going to pay the additional amount. So no, the customer is charged for that upgrade. Absolutely. Okay.
Well, I'm glad to know that. So also, you know, on page 37, it mentions 559 Warwick. Same thing happened there, right?
Yes, that one's still in process. But yes, the same thing is, we're expecting the same thing happened there.
Okay, cool. That's good news. So one more thing also on 37 with regard to the will serves issued. I think I could be mistaken, but usually there's a little bit more information that's provided, a few more details on those will serves. Am I right?
I'm not sure what other information you'd like to see. Any of these could be looked up on Permit Slow if you would like additional information as to exactly what these people are doing. They're all additions.
Okay, if I'm not mistaken, usually there's some indication as exactly what that addition is, if it's a bathroom or something like that.
Yeah, we could definitely start including a brief one sentence.
Yeah. I thought we already did that. Am I wrong?
I think in the past you've done just like a line, just like like 3 or 4 words, basically.
Right.
Remodel, bathroom addition.
Yeah. We can include that in the future report. Thank you.
Okay. Other than that, I don't think I have anything in this section. So thanks very much, Tristan.
Thank you. Director Dean?
I want to tag on to Director Farmer's initial statement about getting the word out on these flyers. I think it would be helpful if the vacation rental agencies would also provide them for the vacation rentals and also the hotels and the restaurants to put in their bathrooms, because who knows what they're flushing there. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Thank you. Dr. Thomas, you had a comment?
Thank you, President Gray. And for Director Farmer's comment, it's possible we put more information here, but I just wanted to point out that on the NCAC website, there's information about all of the projects that are in the permit process. And And you know, they're posted really on the front page of the NCAC website. You can click the, you know, they got links to all of the projects. And so that is another resource.
Yeah. Thank you. Director Farmer?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that if folks are so inclined, it's ncacslo.org.
Ncacslo.org, yeah. We have public comment. Unless everybody through. Yeah, we have public comment from Christine Heinrichs.
Yes, thank you. Christine Heinrichs, Camria. I just have a couple of questions. Please explain the new request for proposals for the water meter project. I understood that that project was funded and well underway. What will the full cost of this project eventually be? And when do you anticipate that it will be completed? And secondly, how will postponing the zero liquid discharge pilot project to October of 2025 affect the progress of the EWS, SWS, WRF coastal development permit application? Thank you.
Thank you. You want to respond?
Yes. So for the advanced metering, we're not sure exactly what the cost is going to be. That's why we sent out the request for proposals. It's going to be within budget. We have $360,000 budgeted for the installation portion. All the equipment we need, the endpoints, the registers has all been purchased already and has been budgeted for. And we anticipate the AMI component installation to be completed by the end of June.
Okay. Thank you very
And then
much.
For the ZLD.
Yeah. Excuse me. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So pushing it a year out to October 25, 2025 will have no impact on the CDP process. Additionally, we, as part of the upgrade for the permit for our wastewater treatment plant's discharge, the ZLD discharge was included in that permit. So we've already have approval from Regional Water for the discharge from that.
Thank you. Any public comment online?
President Gray, can I make one follow-up statement? For the AMI water meter program, those are the endpoints. So when we talk about being budgeted for replacing those endpoints, once we have all those endpoints replaced and AMI is up and running throughout the district, that will inform us on the brass bodies that will eventually need to be replaced because we do have a larger project. So I don't want it to be misunderstood that with that $300,000, we're going to be able to rehab all the meters in the district. We're gonna get some information back from these new installs, how our meters are functioning, target the meters that are not reading accurately, and then implement some sort of a phase to replace the brass bodies over the course of a few years.
Yeah, thank you very much. Ms. Dodson, any online comment?
Yes, Crosby and Laura Swartz.
Ms. Swartz's.
Good afternoon, President Gray, board and staff. I have a comment on the project status summary for the zero liquid discharge pilot project. As noted in the agenda package, the schedule for this pilot project has been slipped out about a year to the fall of 2025. And of course, any kind of a permanent installation would be probably at least a year after that. So this might be a good time to consider an interim way of reducing the brine waste, which I have discussed with the general manager and the utilities manager on May 29th of this year. It involves a minor modification to the existing WRF that essentially add a fourth stage, which cuts the amount of brine waste that has to be disposed of by about half. So that'd be worthwhile doing as a temporary measure while you're waiting for the zero liquid discharge pilot project. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments online?
Yes, Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Ms. Bettenhausen, please proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Bad audio.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Elizabeth Bettenhausen of Cambria for 22 years, going on 90. I think I have some questions about the project's data summaries. What does the difference in color still mean? I remember some discussion of that last time, and I don't remember how that fit into what's being done today, because it doesn't exactly match up with what was said. I've also heard rumors in town about Cambria State Park project and something that happened with the toilet proposal and the location of the state park. So I wonder if there's an update since this little blurb was created in the project description. I also have a question about water supply and demand. I asked last time in the October meeting of for explanation today of the meaning of the whole paragraph on water supply and demand. And I grant that a revision of it to the tune of delete is a an update, but I don't think it quite meets the need. What exactly is the supply and demand of the water in the district according to the last month's summary and this month's summary? So I don't see it in anywhere here, and I would appreciate an update on it. But then I'd appreciate all sorts of things about the CCSD, including on page 36, including the supply and demand. But I would appreciate one final comment and a response to that. This improvement, which you all laud in the presentation of data underwater, strikes me as a mediocre improvement, I'll put it graciously. And I would like to know how this improves the data that are being transmitted to the public in general, but specifically with regard to the water supply and demand. So that is my comment for today. I wish you well in answering all those difficult questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anyone else online wants to comment?
Dennis Ducek.
Mr. Ducek.
Thank you, Mr. President and board and staff. I just wanted to echo some thank yous for all four of the managers who presented their reports today. I thought they were all four managers' reports were clear. They were informative. They were very helpful. Special thank you to the FNR staff for their aggressive preparations for the rainy season, despite the limited staff resources. And I really appreciate the great photo documentation. So thank you.
Thank you. Any more comments?
No.
Thank you very much. If no further questions or comments on the reports. Yes, I was going to say, let's take a 10-minute break, no more than that. And we've got a lot to tackle in the next couple hours, so be ready for plowing through a lot of business. But let's take a little break, and we reconvene at 3:15. I think we're ready to reconvene. Thank you. Let's pick up. We have a very full agenda, so everybody should consider brevity as the watchword and a courtesy to everybody. We have the consent agenda up next. Of course, we take these items. There are four items. We take them up as a unit and with one vote, unless someone wants to call one for separate consideration. And you can ask questions for simple questions for clarification of any item. First of all, does anyone have any questions on all these items that can be dealt with without having a separate vote? Director Thomas.
Thank you, President Gray. Very simple questions. The expenditure report, page 56 to 58, we have 2 to 3 times the usual amount of water department wastewater sample testing for FGL. So did we do increased testing, or is this just catching up on invoices?
It's just the way that the vendor bills us. So I went and looked at last month's, and they were less, and this is including some in August, some in September, some in October invoices. So
thanks.
And Director Thomas, that's for our regional wastewater semi-annual reporting that's required by the Regional Water Control Board.
Also slightly large volume as well. Okay, thanks.
Oh, thank you. Any other questions? Director Dean.
This is kind of a silly question. But on page 53, cat litter bags. Do we have a cat at the wastewater plant, or is this for absorbing oil spills and such?
I would like to say that it's for the oil spills, but we will consider adopting some cats if we have any extra.
That is one of the best absorbents. Yes.
Dr. Farmer.
I know it's brevity and everything, but thank you. Just out of curiosity, on the bottom of page 52, where it says Benjamin Hill Incorporated annual subscription, $720. So, pardon me? Benny Hill. Well, no, I didn't think about that part. But so I was just curious as to what that reference is.
Thank you, Director Farmer. That's for Diamond Maps. That's our mapping system that the water wastewater uses for hydrants, and the fire department uses it as well for our vacant lots.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Farmer.
One other.
Yeah, one other, Dr. Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. Also, on page 77 on the minutes for the September 19 minutes, it was funny. It says, Director Thomas requested to change aloud to... I'm not sure what goes here. And if you're not sure, just ask. But it had been A-L-L-O-W-E-D,
yeah.
And I suggested that it be A-L-O-U-D, and that's what the...
Yeah, that was just missed in my final review. I knew exactly what you said, so I did email President Gray and Vice President Scott with my requested changes to that section. I just didn't catch it when Tim and Lane sent it back to me.
I was going to ask about that. And Dr. Farmer, do you have any more questions? No. I was going to ask... Well, actually, I was going to ask Ms. Dodson just to... list what the changes she made there, because there are a couple of corrections that she made.
The suggested changes would be changing the section that Director Thomas just referenced to Director Thomas requested minor corrections to page 68 of the September 12th minutes that Bruce Howard commented in person at the meeting, Lauren Younger commented via Zoom, and on page 74 that the September 19th minutes reflect the correct spelling of aloud. And then down below in Vice President Scott's motion to add, delete the last sentence in the first paragraph under purpose.
Yeah. Just to make that clear.
Yes. And those are the two changes that I had.
Excellent. Thank you. Any more questions? Is there public comment on the consent agenda?
No.
Okay. And then also, anybody want to pull an item? Okay, good. So I'll bring respect for a motion, I guess.
I'll move that we approve the consent agenda with the minor corrections as noted.
I'll second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda with the minor corrections on the minutes and other items as noted. Got a roll call.
Director Thomas.
Aye.
Director Dean.
Aye.
Director Farmer.
Aye.
Vice President Scott.
Aye.
President Gray.
Aye. Now, moving on to regular business, I'm going to make another adjustment, if everybody is okay with it. It's item 7D, yes, discussion and consideration of the policy committee completion or purpose, because there's several people here in the hall who have to leave early. And if with the board's indulgence, I'd like to move it up to now. And then we will continue after that with 7C and proceeding. And we may end up having to move the Prop 218 forward too, but just depending how quickly we get through this other business. So we'll go to 7D at this point. Mr. McElhinney, you can introduce it.
Thank you, President. I'll introduce it and I'll immediately turn over to Vice President Scott. Mm-hmm. Agenda item 7D, discussion and consideration of policy committee completion of purpose, and direct staff and the district council to prepare a draft of the new committee's purpose, responsibilities, and membership criteria, and update the standing committee bylaws. And with that, I'll turn it over to Vice President Scott.
Thank you, General Manager McElhinney. This is a really tough agenda item for me. I'm the chair of the policy committee and have been for a little over a year. And we have two of our committee members here who have some thoughts on the request of what the board is going to need to make a decision on. But I, after much thought and after much discussion, I'm willing to accept the direction that it appears that the board might take. And I'm here to answer any questions that you might have.
So in this case, I think we want to open the questioning of Vice President Scott to members of the board, first of all. And then once that's done, we'll open it to public comment. Does anybody else have Director Vice President Scott any questions on the board? Director Thomas.
Yeah, I think so. You don't want discussion now. You want only
questions. Just questions. Yeah, some right questions. Yeah, we'll have a discussion after. Okay. Seeing no questions, I'll open this to public comment. I think we already know there are a couple of people who want to speak in the hall first. Anybody want to? Mr. Heinrichs.
Gordon Heinrichs in Cambria, Vice Chair of the Policy Committee. I've been with the Policy Committee ever since it started, the first meeting with Amanda Rice. And that was quite a chore to get her input to provide the services of the committee, community to be on the committee to accomplish this task of being advisory to the board. And there was a questions that just came up in the last month's meetings. It indicated, I guess, that the board is in feeling that we've accomplished all our tasks. And I've got a list of about 12 or so that are still pending. And the first one happened at the first meeting we attended, but has never been fully addressed. It's 3140, unlawful harassment. That was discussed in 2019. And nothing ever got resolved with that. Second was 3142, whistleblowing. That was in January 2nd, 2020. And nothing ever got resolved on that. Then we had several other ones that we did work on, that disaster preparedness, emergency, and climate change, which are all muddled together somewhat, but needed to actually be fine-tuned sometimes. And the big one is still the annual evacuation drill policy that just says we need to have a drill policy, but we don't have one. And then to serve letters, policy concerning the maintenance and upkeep of Cambria, and the overview of the general manager's role has never been discussed. That's policy 1050. The board secretary was looked at policy 1015, but was felt that wasn't necessary, but it seems that there may be a need for that these days. And dispersed surplus property equipment with 2200 section needs a policy, but the general manager now is already dispersing of equipment without a policy. Well, these are things that and others that we could address still yet. So my thought is if we could extend the policy committee for another year's activities to fine tune the remaining portions and sort of spearhead this in with any other thinking that the board may have instead of just cutting it off and saying we just let it lie where it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heinrichs. Mr. Powell. I know Mr. Howell here. Okay, here we go.
Thank you, President Gray. The previous speaker raised some interesting points, and I think that there is some validity to them. However, when this proposal was first, when I first became aware of it, my initial reaction was, oh no, we need to finish our work. But as I, after I left the last policy committee meeting and had time to think about it, I actually have come around to the other position. While it is true that there are policy matters that can and should be dealt with, but the board is certainly capable of doing that, what I always look for is opportunities for public engagement. And so, and this is when I realized, wait a minute, this is a really good idea. The policy committee right now is kind of winding, it's kind of spinning its wheels a little bit, and it's a little hard to see directions forward. But I found it very exciting to think perhaps that this board could benefit by not an advisory, not a advisory committee, but a working committee, very much like PROS, where that the public can engage with and work with. And so I think it's an excellent idea. I highly recommend it. I'm afraid my other committee members may beat me up, but I really think that this is an opportunity. What I would be concerned about is were you just to discard the committee completely. But as long as you've opened another path for public engagement, I think it's a really, really good idea. So I think you should go forward with this as recommended by your vice president. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Howell. Ms. Dodson, do you have any comment online?
No.
Okay, thank you. Back to the board. This time for discussion.
Yes, could I take to say a couple of things?
Certainly.
And I really do hear that there is a way to address some of the things that Mr. Heinrichs has suggested that we still look at. One of the things is that evacuation and disaster preparedness would be part of the committee, the new committee that is being suggested. The other thing is that we have not had a chance to look at the personnel policies that are being worked on by another group, and the harassment policy and the whistleblowing policy, I understand, will be part of those policies. So I think there's a way to really look at doing policy work, for instance, through a board ad hoc committee meeting, assignment, that perhaps we could even have input from the public. But I do think that the need of this board is to have a working committee that looks at some of the greater needs of the community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Did you? Yeah, Dr. Thomas, you have a comment? Yes.
Sure. Thank you, President Gray. And you knew that I would, but the policy committee has been very impactful. If I think back when I started engaging with CCSD on Director Dean's Resources and Infrastructure Committee and the general sense of transparency under the current general manager, et cetera. Apologies for laughing. But the transparency and the concerns of the community. So a committee of citizens committee engaging in policy development. It was very opportunity rich and so much opportunity. And the policy committee has done a fabulous job. I've got a copy of the latest, you went through the list of policies. I've got it all organized. It's like, yes. Okay. So we are, engineers or mathematicians could call it the asymptote. In other words, the law of diminishing returns, there's not much benefit at this stage. There will always be policy needs. I definitely concur that, those can be met by an ad hoc committee of the board for specific targeted needs. And given the amount of remaining increment, it's not going to be greatly engaging of the larger community. Now, my initial reaction of fire safety was like, we already have a fire safety focus group, but this is a different focus. I understand, Chief Berkey has communicated that, this is something that he needs. You want to engage the community, talk about fire safety. Oh my goodness. There's going to be some energy that is going to be engaging. So now I would advocate separating these. It kind of reads like we're reframing the policy committee as a fire safety standing committee, and to me, that's like, no, that's not what we should be doing. I mean, we should be applauding the work that has been done. you know, party, open bar. I don't know what it takes, but I mean, the work that has been done is fantastic. And then, you know, framing the new committee, it's not a continuation of the existing. This is a new committee.
Yeah.
So those are, yeah, those are my thoughts.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Gray. First, I want to say that I had the good fortune slash challenge of being the chair of the policy committee for a short while. And I admired the passion, the uniqueness of all the members of the policy committee. They all have, it's just different. That's all I could say. And I really appreciated and admired the effort that everybody made on the policy committee. I really want to acknowledge Gordon. He's, like he said, he's been there from the beginning. He was vice chair when I was there prior to that. And now that Vice President Scott has been doing it, Mr. Howell has been on the policy committee. He's previously on the board president. So I'm taking into consideration the comments that everybody has made, including the fact that two of the members of the policy committee will not be returning to the policy committee, which creates a bit of a bind right there. Trying to find two new people for policy would probably be a bit of a challenge in and of itself. And even though at first I'm somewhat like other members of the board thinking, well, we need to continue the policy committee, but I think the suggestion that we can always have an ad hoc committee of members of the board to address those issues and move forward to, we have, as Mr. Howell said, opportunities for public engagement. That certainly seems to be something that's the reason standing committees were encouraged in the first place. And so I'm kind of in agreement with moving forward in that regard. And I want to thank everybody for the comments that they've made up until now.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Director Dean.
And I want to add to the comments already made that the policy committee has done a great job. Yeah. And yes, they're a very passionate group and worked very hard on the policies that they did accomplish. I do think, though, that we need an evacuation and a disaster preparedness committee, a fire protection committee. And I do think you're going to get a lot of public engagement for that. And I think Mr. Heinrichs would be good on that committee as well. And I'm hoping he will apply for that committee because I know that he and Ms. Heinrichs have done some research on evacuations in other areas. So I think, you know, some of the policy committee members probably will reapply to do this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I know that Chief Berkey has also told me that he would really appreciate having a committee like that and getting input from the public on this issue.
Yeah.
So I agree with what's being planned. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I would just like,
Scott, yeah.
Yeah, and I would just like to ask Chief Berkey if he'd like to say a few words.
Thank you so much. Yeah, absolutely. If you're asking me to justify a committee that's dedicated to the fire department, it's gonna be very easy for me to say yes, absolutely. To explain that this is not only just a want, it's a need, in my view. Day in and day out, there's so many tasks that I'm attempting to complete for our community, and it's very difficult. As you know, I feel like I'm more or less a single resource in a lot of ways, and so having this committee will absolutely give me a direct route from the community to be able to solve a lot of those problems and give me the platform to be able to address these issues. And I know it's been brought up that we have the Fire Safe Council, and they are phenomenal. They do our Fire Safe focus group here in Cambria. And they do such a great job, but I feel like having this direct route to our community is just, and for me to get that influence is just so important. Yeah, absolutely. I have to be able to advise that this is, again, a necessity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you very much. Any more comment? Or?
Yeah, I think the general manager.
General manager, yeah.
I just wanted to follow up on Chief Perkins' statement. So yeah. He and I have talked closely about this possibility, if the board so chooses. There's a bit of a disconnect sometimes with the Fire Safe Focus Group and how they report to the board. The chief, which is the way he's built, really operates that department with not much interaction with the general manager or admin to make that group work efficiently and well. But the thought of having a fire protection committee where he can come with his department needs, community needs, have community input, and have a board of director there that then reports to the board as a whole, I think will bring in the fire department. And we talk about some of these concerns that the community has with wildfire evacuation routes. We talk about infrastructure with engines. R&I is a fabulous committee, Director Dean, but would a fire protection committee be the better route to then bring forward infrastructure within infrastructure needs with the fire department, as in fire engines, equipment, things of that nature? I think it would just allow the community members to come in. We talk about weed abatement. That's a huge topic. So I think it really brings us in. I think we should work in unison with the Fire Safe Focus Group, have a liaison from them on that committee or as a part of reporting to that committee. And then those types of things get brought to the board. And I think it brings in the district a little bit tighter. As we know, utilities is well vetted through a lot of our committees. Our fire department isn't. They're kind of an island. So I think this is an opportunity to bring in some of the concerns. And again, the department is an all-risk department. EMS, structure fires, wildfires, surf rescue. I mean, these are a lot of different things that maybe the community doesn't know that they deal with on a daily basis. And I think that committee would do an excellent job of bringing them into the fold.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to follow up on that because we haven't really gone into detail about what the new committee would do and how far its scope would be. But fire protection, our fire department, let's say the work of the fire department alone includes more than fire protection. It's also emergency response generally, public safety. So, you know, the exact title of this committee and the exact first purview will get worked out over the next few weeks, and we'll have a chance to look at what, you know, the staff comes up with. But my view of it is that Cambria has, you know, a huge part of our budget and our attention is on fire safety in all respects. And we don't really have a committee. We have a committee for utilities. R&I is basically utilities and a committee for obviously finance, but, you know, financing everything. PROS tends to interact quite a bit with F&R, obviously, but fire is, I think, as general manager was saying, has kind of been cut off from that process of public input and being able to kind of interact directly with the public as to what they see as needs, and also how for the fire department to kind of explain what, you know, can be done and might need to be done. So that's one reason I think it's a good choice for a new committee. Now, just to say about the policy committee, former president, former director Howell and I did a lot of work on you know, sort of trying to figure out what the policy committee needed to do and how to manage it and how to organize that work and updating, basically getting us updated with the policy handbook categories. And I was impressed by how huge a task it was that the policy committee had already accomplished, and also what had to be done and what since then has been done. I think the policy committee has done a wonderful job on that. And it's kind of what they were assigned to do. And the things I think Vice President Scott mentioned about, or Vice President Director Dean mentioned about the some things that can be done that haven't been done by the policy committee are actually pretty well suited to a new committee like this, especially things like what evacuation drills and so forth. I mean, this is the sort of thing the new committee would deal with. So it's time to make the transition, I think, and for a lot of good reasons. And I applaud the policy committee members for their hard work, and it was very hard work. And I think we should, you know, put this process in motion and have in next meeting, we should have a detailed proposal come back to vote on. My thoughts. So any other?
Yes, just
advice on this thought. Yeah.
Yeah, just a couple of things. I started interfacing with the CCSD as a member of the policy committee, which was really fun. I always loved it. And both through Mr. Howell and then also Director Farmer, both were instrumental in suggesting that I run for actually
place on the board of directors. So I have, as I said earlier, I have, you know, some angst about letting go of the policy committee, but they have done some wonderful work and have really been willing to give their opinions and to listen to what the needs are of this board. And so I can't say thank you enough to those, especially to Mr. Heinrichs and Mr. Howell. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Vice President Scott. I will, I guess at this point, ask for a motion. Someone wants to make one. Director Thomas.
I move that we approve the policy committee completion of purpose and direct staff and district council to prepare a draft of the new committee's purpose, responsibility, and membership criteria, and updating the standing committee bylaws, with the focus being in the realm of fire safety, emergency preparedness, and related focus.
That's good. Thank you.
A second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the policy committee completion of purpose and direct staff and district council to prepare a draft of the new committee's purpose, responsibilities, and membership criteria, and update the standing committee bylaws, with the focus of the new committee being on fire protection, emergency services, and I think one other...
And emergency response.
Emergency response, yes. Could I have a roll call, please?
Director Thomas.
Aye.
Director Dean.
Aye.
Director Farmer.
Aye.
Vice President Scott.
Aye.
President Gray.
Aye. So moving back up the regular business list, I think we can go to 7B, which is discussion, receive, discuss, and file the first quarter budget report for fiscal year 2024-25. Either Mr. McElhenney or Ms. Fritz want to take this one?
Thank you, President Gray. Agenda item 7B, receive, discuss, and file the first quarter budget report for fiscal year 24-25. The board adopted this fiscal year budget 24-25 on August 15th, 2024, and I'll pass it over to Ms. Fritz.
Thank you. So in the staff report, it's reflected the two different budget adjustments that we made during the first quarter. The first one was for expenses related to moving the administrative offices, as well as increasing the contract for professional services related to the WRF, the CDP permit. So both of those are reflected in this budget report. And overall, there's no surprises for the first quarter budget report. And if you look through it, you can see that our revenues are less than our expenditures, which is very normal for this time of year. And we'll see that starting to pick up in the next quarter as we're receiving more regular property tax payments. And I also want to point out that there were two emergency expenditures that were approved by the general manager through the first quarter. And we were reporting on them in this report. One was for roof and gutter repairs for the fire station, and it was in the amount of approximately $22,000. And that was done on an emergency basis with the rain coming and our ability to get a vendor out in a timely manner, which can be very difficult for some of these, as well as for the emergency water repair right here at the Vets Hall and the Lions Club. And so those, just reporting that those did happen and the general manager approved those emergency expenditures during the first quarter. And so with that, I'm open to any questions.
Okay. Vice President Scott. Oh, no. Okay. Any questions? Okay. I just had a quick question on the money that was allocated to the moving of the administrative offices. Have we ended up spending all that, or we come up in under budget?
Person Gray, I believe we are under budget. We still have some needs of those monies. We eventually I'm not sure if all of the directors have seen the actual new office, but there is going to be a need to create some walls to create separation from this, what is a very large medical office that we got half of, or a little less than half of. And so eventually we're going to need to build a wall, a door, and things like that. So we're getting quotes on that. I'll turn it back to Ms. Fritz if she has an estimate of what we've spent so far.
I do not, but I will bring one next time.
Thank you.
But we are, I think, well under budget. In part to facilities and resources, as well as the fire department helping us with a lot of different things.
Yeah, that was mentioned as Mr. Aguirre mentioned that the his crew did a lot of the moving work. Right, you didn't have to hire a mover.
And the fire department put together several desks with drills, and they came by and spent hours helping us put things together. Yeah, so
it's good. It's good.
There's a lot of help, teamwork.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for an invitation to come and tour your new office.
Me too.
You're welcome anytime.
Anytime it's open.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody? Yeah. Any more questions? Any public comment on this item?
No.
You're online. Okay. So I'll bring this back to the board for discussion. And all you have to do, discussion, we just file it. We don't have to approve anything. So any further discussion? I guess the report is hereby filed. I don't believe we have to take a vote on that. Our counsel's still here?
Good. He's shaking his head no.
Good. That's right. Okay, no, so I'll move on to 7C, which is discussion and consideration of adoption of procurement policies and procedures. This is something that the policy committee has done a lot of work on, as well as the finance committee. And I think this is the final version of it, hopefully. I'll hand this over to General Manager McElhenney.
Thank you, President Gray. I'll make it quick, and I'll probably be handing it right back to Mrs. Fritz. Agenda item 7C, discussion and consideration of adoption of a procurement policies and procedures policy 2135. There's no fiscal impact by adopting these revised policies, and I will turn it over to Ms. Fritz.
Thank you, Ms. Fritz. Sorry.
Thank you. So the staff report kind of shows the journey that this policy and procedure has taken. And so it has been seen numerous times before the policy committee as well as the finance committee. And the way that we handled this one is, we had the policy and finance committee review it each separately. And then I compiled different changes. We brought it back before the finance committee. And then the policy committee was given a chance to review like a clean version and give their comments. And so you can see here, I tried to filter down the suggestions on policy, the policy committee's suggestions that were not sort of implemented by the finance committee in this policy and procedure. And so with that, I think I will open it up to any questions that the board may have.
I have a question. This is sort of a general question. I think there have been, in the lead up to this meeting, there were some corrections, I think, noted, or some things that needed some minor editing, or I wanted maybe either Mr. McElhenney or Ms. Fritz can summarize what changes corrections have been made to this document before we start discussing it. Anything? No? Okay, so we'll note things as we go then, I guess. Yeah. So any questions first?
Yeah. So at this time you don't want suggested revisions, correct?
Not suggested revisions until we get to discussion. Okay, is there any public comment? Here or online?
No.
Okay, thank you. Come back to the board for discussion. Now you can suggest any changes. I think Director Thomas, start.
Thank you, President Gray. And I want to proceed this with, this isn't just not just empty to set you up for a few revisions, but truly this policy is so much cleaner. I tried to compare it with the former policy, and it's just, oh my gosh. It is so much clearer and so much easier to understand. Let's start from that point. A few minor things that would improve the clarity, I believe, on page 177, page 3 of the policy, where it's 1.4. It talks about work referenced for in the approved budget for the upcoming fiscal year. So this means that we would give the authority to staff to do things for the following year, but not for this year. And so I think if we simply strike out the words for the upcoming fiscal year, it would read more accurately our intent that the fiscal year budget approved by the board provides authority to staff to procure materials, et cetera, referenced in the approved budget period.
Okay. I'm noting these as we go with the discussion.
So page 180.
80, yeah.
Page 6 of the policy, 2.2. Then the next paragraph, the general manager is authorized to exceed budgeted expenditures by 20% without board approval. Go down to B1. If the total price of a budget line item exceeds the budgeted amount by more than 20%, the general manager's approval will be required. My head hurts on that one, but isn't there, it seems that there's a inherent contradictory there.
I'll bring this back to the general manager.
I think there's just two or three more. Department manager. Page 183, really minor, kudos again for using throughout conventional capitalization, and then the one opportunity at the very last paragraph, in this instance of the department manager, we probably want that capitalized as well as the other references to department manager. That's at the bottom of page 183. And
that's what you're saying, yeah.
Let's see, at the top of page 10 of the policy, 184 in the agenda packet, the board shall approve contracts, et cetera, greater than $25,000. And then the number has an extra 5 in there. We don't mean 525,000. So that looks like a simple correction.
Got it.
And let's see. 80. In a moment. So page, there we go, 186, 3.5 D and E. A bit convoluted here. The following intermediate supervisory staff, et cetera. So we have facilities and resources manager, fire chief, and utilities department manager. And then it says the next line says all purchases of 10,000 or over will require the signature of a department manager. And 3 of the titles in the paragraph above are department managers. So
yes, that is correct. So that is just saying if the wastewater system superintendent or water system superintendent need to purchase something over $10,000, they would need to go get their department manager's signature.
Then it would appear that we could do that.
I think.
I got you. Yeah, so these can both be true.
Yeah, they can both be true. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That one's fair enough. I think there's just one other where greater than So page 188, under 4.5, right. The line item says professional services contracts with 50,000 or more, and line A says greater than 50,000. So it's one or the other. So I think what we want to say is $50,000 or more in this case. But the headline and how we say it under item A should be consistent. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest that A read for contracts estimated to be $50,000 or more.
Yeah.
And I think there's just one more.
Well, maybe I'll, while we're working on that, we need to extend the meeting. I'm going to put it to 5 o'clock, and that includes the closed session. So if everybody's running, if everybody's unanimous consent on that, okay, and we'll continue to 5 o'clock. Okay, I think.
The top of page 190. My head hurt on this one a little bit. You know, we're it sounds like we're calling out contracts that would be between $200,000 and $212,500. This is an odd one.
Yeah, Ms. Fritz, you have it. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is under our specifically under the procurement of public works. So any contract over $200,000 or over requires a formal bidding process. This is saying if we're going through an informal bidding process and quotes come in a little bit over that $200,000, the board has the authority to take a vote. And if there's a 4/5 vote, they can approve it through the informal bidding process up to $212,500. If they don't approve it, then it needs to go back and go through the formal bidding process.
So you have a little scooch wiggle room.
We have a little wiggle room to do informal, yeah. Based upon board approval.
Got it. Okay. So those two. All right. That's it. Thank you very much.
I think I took note of most of these. Any other questions or comments and discussion?
One question I would ask.
Yeah.
In the challenge in stating a motion, you know, I think it's easy to pass things up, and we've had motions where they've been rather lengthy. And in the best efforts of the president to restate the motion, you know, some of the motion gets left out, and then Ms. Dotson has the challenge of trying to figure out which
I have a couple more little typos I found, or little, actually some minor corrections, but I'll try to do is I'll list them if we see them all need to be done, and Ms. Dotson can take them down or get them off the tape.
Yeah, I'm actually noting them so I can actually do it in the end for you guys if you'd good. Like.
Yeah. Okay. I just had a couple. I had a couple. The and I agree with the on page 3 on page 177 about the redundancy of upcoming fiscal year. I think we just can delete that. There's a really some minor. Oh, on page 8, 182 rather. In the chart under dollar amount, that third amount should be 200,000, not 2,000, 200,001, because there's the other ones end at round number and up, 60,000 and up, zero and up. This should be 200,000 and up. Department manager, I got that one. There's a typo. This is a grammar thing on page 189 under 5.2b. It should say the final sentence of that should say contracts between 60,001 and 200,000 require board approval, no S, plural. And I'll make a general comment here at two spots. I don't know, maybe this is my old-fashioned English major thing, but there's references, when there's references made to the general manager and a pronoun is used, instead of his, her, or whatever, we use there, which kind of grates. I mean, that's the thing now, but I don't know if that'll last well, but there's two spots. There's on page 190 under 6.2, check signing procedures, and a couple spots, and then, and I'll give it up to the board whether they want to do that. And then it's on...
I had wanted to comment on that.
Yeah, and their absence. Yeah, and also on page 180 under 2.2b, I would just say repeat general manager. Repeat the word general manager. So there's no straining of the for a pronoun there. If the plural pronoun is kind of odd, that's just up to you guys. It's stylistic.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. My thought is it's time we catch up with the century we're in, and we have had several policies where there were, you know, his, he and his, that we have really worked hard to grind out of the system because, either gender is going to be successful in any of these roles. And kind of generally accepted practice these days is there.
Oh, I would say, well, I guess if
I don't think we need to, to lengthen it and say general manager 100 times. I would just use there and use the current convention.
Yeah. So,
President Gray, can I follow up on one of Director Thomas's page 186 of the policy and referencing the 20% expenditure?
Mm-hmm.
So, if we go to
2.2,
page 180. 2.2A. I spoke with Ms. Fritz, and we're in agreement that that's referring to budgeted items that would go over by 20%. And then 2.2B, subject to section C below, those would be the situations in which differ. Does that make sense? I can have Ms. Fritz jump in as well.
Yeah.
So when it says subject to section C, those are the specific situations where the board has to approve an expenditure. And so that's speaking to if that goes over 20%, that the general manager has the authority to approve things up to 20%. And I also have a comment about a different section as well.
Do we need to add language there? Do we need to add language to that section?
I think it makes sense to me.
Yeah. Okay. And you had a comment too.
So I want to go back to page 189, the section 5.3 about the informal bidding procedures for the public works. So on in that section, we just looked up the Tristan pointed out to me that the public contract code section that we follow is increasing the limits. And so it's going to be up to 220,000, and the limits are increasing in January. So I don't know if we want to reflect that. And
In other words, maybe we should. I guess we could always amend the policy when the change comes. Just a simple change, but adopt it now. Is this still the current limit?
Or we could put a sentence in there that we are following this public contract code section. So when the limits increase, we don't have to always come back and change the policy.
That's good. Yeah. And so we're already saying pursuant to public contract code section 22034D. Any suggestions for how to reword that?
When does that change?
January.
Kind of
feels like it's, you climbing trees, you get up to a point where you say, all right, I'm not going out on this branch. It's getting a little thin. There's a lot of content here.
Yeah.
So is there a good case for Ms. Fritz has heard all this content. Yeah. She could take this zip and come back to us.
I think
what I would suggest.
My view too is that we should, wait till, in this case in particular, just wait till the change comes. We just do our, we'll approve this now. With the changes noted, I think we have Ms. Dodson, maybe you don't want to, when you we ask for a motion, you might want to just list the changes that were we agreed on, and then we have a motion and a vote. So
I do have one.
Director Scott.
Yeah. This is on page 180, page 6 of the policy, under 2.2B, and this is just my English major thing. Generally, you don't put a 1 underneath B if you don't have a 2.
Yeah. Okay, just delete them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other revisions? Ms. Dodson, can you just read off what we've given you that we all kind of agree on?
Yeah. Sure. On page 3, section 1.4, fiscal year budget, the first sentence will now read, the fiscal year budget approved by the board provides the authority to CCSD staff to procure materials, supplies, equipment, services, and public works referenced in the approved budget period. The second change is on page 6 of the policy, 2.2B. General manager approval subject to section C below, the general manager or in his or her absence. Vice President Scott requested removing 2.2B1, and that will just be a sentence without number 1. Mm-hmm. On page 8 of the policy, section C, President Gray requested that 200,001 be changed to 200,000. On page 9 of the policy, Director Thomas requested to capitalize department manager and 3.2B. On page 10 of the policy, 3.3A, Director Thomas requested to remove the 5 to reflect $25,000 instead of $525,000. On page 14 of the policy, under 4.5A, the sentence will read, for contracts estimated to be $50,000 or more, the Board of Directors shall approve the award of professional service contracts. On page 15 of the policy, 5.2B, it now reads, public projects of $200,000 or less may be let to contract by informal procedures as set forth in the UPCCAA. Contracts between $60,001 and $200,000 require board approval, which removes the S out of requires. On page 16 of the policy, you directed Mrs. Fritz to come back to update the public contract code section 22034D to reference the $220,000 excess limit. Mm-hmm. On page 16 of the policy, under 6.2C and D, change or their designee to his or her designee.
I think that's it.
And I believe that is all.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That is satisfactory. Could we have a motion?
There was one more that I had wanted to bring up. Yeah, the capitalization, methodology has been consistent except on the tables. The table on page 7 of the policy, page 181. Here, like every verb has been capitalized, whereas through the rest of this policy, it reads normally. And for example, 5,000 to 9999 required should not be capitalized. And in the next line as well, 50,000 plus approval required and amount should not be capitalized. You know, where it says board approval required, we don't need to capitalize every single word. And so if we could just revise the table consistently.
And just have standard capitalization rather than title capitalization. Yeah. And that would be a way to look at it. Any other changes? Oh, Vice President Scott.
I have a motion.
Good. we're due for one, I think.
Yes. I move that we adopt the procurement policies and procedures policy number 2135 with the edits outlined by Ms. Fritz.
Ms. Dotson.
Yes, Ms. Dotson. Thank you.
Motion, is there a second?
Yeah.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we adopt the policy with the changes as outlined by Ms. Dodson. Any discussion? Can I have a roll call, please?
Vice President Scott?
Aye.
Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Thomas?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Gray?
Aye. Okay. Moving on to I think we're going to do our regular order here. I noticed Jeff Claren from Waste Connections is
yes, President.
Available, so maybe
he is here, and he would have to leave at 5. And so, depending on the amount of questions that the director or the public would have, it could get tight.
Well, let's see, we should let me see what
sure looks easy. This
this is actually pretty straightforward. I think this would be 7F that we'd take. I don't want to take things too much out of order. If 7E, I think I'd like to do first if we can, because I don't think it's going to be a time consuming item. So let's do 7E first, which is the discussion and consideration proposed guidelines for handling written public comments at board meetings, because we have a policy that's been developed for us. Mr. McElhinney?
Agenda item 7E, discussion and consideration of proposed guidelines for handling written public comments at board meetings. There's no fiscal impact associated with the item. On September 12, 2024, Director Farmer and Director Thomas requested placing reading aloud written comments submitted by the public during board meetings on a future board agenda for further consideration. Subsequently, on October 10th, the Board of Directors directed the staff and council to create guidelines for handling such written comments during meetings. We've attached those guidelines, and I'll turn it over to the board.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the board? Vice President Scott.
I don't know that this is a question. It's probably more of a suggestion, so you want to wait.
Okay, I'll wait. Yeah.
Okay.
Any questions? Any public comment?
No.
Okay, thank you. Back to discussion.
Yes.
And a motion, perhaps. Vice President Scott.
Yes. On page 220 of the packet and on the first page of the policy under distribution to board members, the first bullet says the written comments submitted in advance will be compiled and distributed to all board members 24 hours before the board meeting for review. I don't know where to put this, but what I want to say is that there are those who don't have computers or those who do not have, and I'm talking about the committee, the community members who may not have internet access. I was wondering if it would be possible to actually print those comments and have them back by the agendas. So maybe three or four, I don't know, five. Copies of those. It wouldn't be under distribution to board members, but
maybe my number six and posting.
Uh-huh.
Posting, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we could do on the first item there, the first bullet, the written comments submitted in advance shall be compiled and posted on the district's website 24 hours before the meeting, and
copies will be available at
made available in hard copy at the meeting.
That's also a Brown Act requirement.
Yeah.
Well, I knew that. Thank you.
In printed copies at the meeting. Yeah. Okay. Any other? Dr. Thomas.
Thank you, President Gray. Just two comments on page 221 under five inappropriate comments. The first sentence, written comments must pertain to matters within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board, period. We should put a full stop there, because to say, or to an item on the meeting agenda, is inherently redundant. Anything that's on the meeting agenda will be within the subject matter of the district. So we don't need or to an item of the meeting agenda. Because it can't be on the agenda if it's not within our purview.
I want to avoid confusion. I don't want people to think that it's only for the non-agenda public comment section, though. I mean, I think that's you could say.
Oh, okay, okay.
You see what I'm saying?
It can be general or confusion.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would just say get rid of the comment after board.
Yeah. Okay.
The second comment, the second sentence, you read it a few times. It's like, well, of course we don't want personal attacks, but like, do we really need to, really need to say that?
I think it's nice advice.
But, you know, I just wanted to ask.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, they won't be. It's posted. Yeah.
Yeah.
Vice President Scott.
Yeah, I just wanted to speak to that. And in that, they will be posted, but they won't be read.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I mean, we can't, I think we have to be very careful to say, okay, this is a personal attack, and then this is just about policies, procedures, programs, and services. I think we want to get in the habit of making that decision.
Yeah. Agreed. Any other comments? Or I have one. No, I'm sure. If you go ahead, Director Dino. Oh.
I was just going to agree with the personal attacks things, because we have had offensive and personal attacks towards our staff and board members before. So I think it's important that that be in there.
Yeah. I had a couple of small emendations to recommend, but Director Farmer, you go first.
Thank you. Yes, having been the recipient of four personal attacks since I've been on the board, I think that should also be included. And I just want to say, at first, I really thought it was important to read written comments, and I understand what Vice President Scott was saying with regard to, well, some people don't have a computer, they don't necessarily have access to the information with regard to written comments. But I think overall, this particular item as stated here pretty much covers what we should be approaching this.
That's good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. I just had a couple little things. I think on item on section two, on the second bullet, when it says the following shall also be included on the agenda, to be clear, I guess NCCSD website, because I think where people actually submit their comments, I don't know if it's already there, but there should be that statement, personal information, yada, yada, should also be on the website where people actually do the submittals. That makes sense?
You're saying that on the website, we should include the email address, phone number, the options for that?
No, it says... The same statement, please note the ones in quotes, not just on the agenda, but also, and I'm trying to remember where you would put, when you submit comment, written comment on the website, it's not actually on the agenda, is it?
No.
Yeah, this, where you do submitting the written comment, you'd also put that same statement, that's sure. All. So I just say agenda and CCSD website. And just a will and shall thing at the end, and under six, first bullet, I think shall. The written comments submitted in advance shall be compiled. Just to make it clear that it's mandatory rather than just, you know, something weaker. Those are only my only changes. Oh, the six, first bullet under six. And that's it for me. Anybody else? Director Farmer. Oh, nope. I guess I'll turn this over to the board for a motion. Right. I think there was
You already asked for public comment.
Yeah, right. We did. There was none.
Do you want me to go over the changes like we did with the purchasing policy?
Yeah, it'd be good.
Okay. President Gray asked that under section 2, the second bullet point, that this statement be added to the website. On section 5, inappropriate comments, Director or Vice President Scott requested to remove a comma after jurisdiction of the board. On section 6, President Gray requested that will be changed to shall. And so the sentence will now read with Vice President Scott's change, the written comments submitted in advance shall be compiled and posted on the district's website 24 hours before the meeting, and copies will be available at the meeting.
Okay, good. I guess it. Motion?
And just to confirm, the second bullet under item 2 will read the following shall be also be included on the agenda and on the CCSD website.
Yes.
Correct.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
In other words, we are going to revise that sentence on this policy to state that.
So it'll read the following shall be included on the agenda and CCSD website.
Exactly. Yeah. We have a motion.
I'd like to make the motion that the board approve the proposed guidelines for handling written public comment at board meetings.
With the
changes as noted. Yeah, thank you.
I have a second.
Second.
It's moved and seconded that the board approve the proposed policy on handling written public comments at board meetings and with changes noted. Ms. Dodson, a roll call, please.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Vice President Scott?
Aye.
Director Thomas?
Aye.
Director Dean?
Aye.
President Gray?
Aye. One more item, 7F, discussion and consideration of approval of Proposition 218 notice regarding Mission Community Disposal, solid waste collection, disposal rate increase request, and consideration of scheduling a Proposition 218 hearing date. This is an updated, somewhat small update on this one. It's amended on Monday. So I'll turn this over again to staff and to present.
Thank you, President Gray. Agenda item 7F, as stated, discussion and consideration of approval of Proposition 218 notice regarding Mission Country Disposal solid waste collection and disposal rate increase request and consideration of scheduling a Proposition 218 hearing date. All costs associated with the processing of the proposed rate increase to comply with the requirements of Prop 218 will be borne by Mission Country Disposal. As discussed last week, some of the drivers for this are the increased rates for solid waste and green waste recycling services, such as CPI adjustments, revenue balancing mechanisms, updated depreciation of lifespan for trucks, et cetera. And so it's detailed here in the staff report, and we're open to any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for staff?
So we only have one board meeting in January. So is that the date you're proposing, or are we looking at a special meeting?
We will be looking, Director Dean, we'll be looking at a special meeting January 16th. Our meeting of January 9th is too early in the notice period. So it would have to be the 16th.
Okay.
Or later.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions? Dr. Thomas.
The question about when we look at the current rates listed as in the rate adjustment application and trying to match them to the current rates, I found myself going down the rat hole, trying to match them up, and the general manager had an explanation that I certainly can't replay. So perhaps share that.
Yeah.
I'll try to do it because it's actually a replay of Mr. Carmel. So I'll try to go over this as the best I can, but in 2022, when we did the rate increases, we did them halfway through the year. And so those increases the increases per month were more for half the year, which was noted in the resolution. And then there was a drop off the following year because we didn't need to play catch up, so to speak. And so there's a discrepancy in what's posted on our resolution and the costs of our various different gallon size trash cans and the various different rates that don't match the Prop 218 notice. That's, let's say, $124.58 for the 96 gallon. But if you're to look on the resolution from 2022, it's $127.07. And that was for the adjustment for raising the rates halfway through 2022. And Mr. Carmel can fix anything that I messed up there.
Hopefully. Gotcha. So in the resolution from 2022, the sentence that reads, this recovery component will expire April 1st, April Fool's 2023. That's okay.
That's right. And then we, Ms. Dodson and myself, pulled the 2024 rates off of Mission Country Disposal's website that match our Prop 218, and we posted them on our website, which were not there before.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, I'll take this turn us over to public comment. Is there any?
No.
Good, thank you. Back to the board for discussion. And of course, we have Mr. Claren here, if we have any questions of him. But I think this sounds to me like this is a extension of last week's present. You know, the dollar amounts here, the figures are consistent. So I think I was, you know, after thoroughly studying this, I think we covered it. The presentation last week covered this. And I think what's notable is that we have with the new system of rate setting, we have a slight improvement in what we would have had without it. And beyond that, the complexities are a little bit daunting, but I think it's a better system. It's also a smoother system in terms of rate setting over during coming years. So all we're doing now, Dr. Scott.
Yeah, thank you.
Dr. Scott.
I did put this in an email to the general manager and to our finance, our CFO. And this is on page 225 of our packet, and it is related to the table. Did you get a chance to read my email, either one of you?
I did, and Vice President Scott, and I replied with the feedback from Kyle, and I sent that to you last night.
Oh, I didn't see that.
I can read it off.
That would be good.
Just give me 1 second to find it through the sea of emails I have here. Okay, I'm going to read it the way Kyle emailed it. What the table represents is the breakdown of the 12.78% in total. For example, if you had a bill that was $100, it will now be $112.78 with the math as follows. $100 original bill with a $2.94 adjustment for the HZI digester, a $2.23 LF tip fee, $5.42 for wages, $2.19 for general inflation, $112.78 total new bill. I said, keep in mind that this table was from the old application amount and not the revised proposed adjustments presented through R3. I hope this helps.
That makes it confusing because the actual total is, they're not quite the same. What we're actually proposing is 12.6, right? 12.59% instead of 12.78.
So
it is kind of confusing because these older documents kind of make it.
Yeah. So this is this is July 3rd. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Any other questions? I guess we can bring it up to,
Director, so we came up with a date. We need a time for the resolution.
I'm sorry, say that one more time, Director Dean.
For the notice of public hearing, we came up with a date of January 16th, 2025. We need to come up with a time to complete the resolution.
I spoke with President Gray, and given that we have committee meetings on that day at 1 p.m. and 3 p.m., we thought 10 a.m. would be appropriate for the hearing, but I'll leave that to the board.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's good. May I make a comment to Mr. Clarence, which is
slightly not related to the Prop 218?
Sure.
Okay. I just want to compliment Mr. Clarence for the presentation that he did at our last meeting. And I also want to compliment Mr. Clarence for the employees that he has that are so capable and considerate and polite and, you know, the best service I've ever seen. They'll even run down a road and catch a, you know, to catch a piece of paper blowing. And we had an incident the other day with our oil pan, and it was responded to immediately. I really appreciate the fact that he's got such good staff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Dean. That was very nice of you.
Hi. Thank you for bearing with us.
Yes.
Vice President Scott.
Yes. I was wondering if Tina is on the line because she started to make a statement about this and
she's not.
Okay.
I think it's time for us to move on to a motion if we have one.
So does the motion need to include the date and the time?
Yes.
Okay. I move that we approve Proposition 218 notice requiring Mission Country Disposal solid waste collection and disposal rate increase request in consideration. And scheduling that Prop 218 hearing for January 16th, 2025 at 10 a.m.
Okay. Second?
I'll second that.
It's moved and seconded that we approve the Proposition 218 notice regarding Mission Country Disposal solid waste collection and disposal rate increase request, and that we schedule the Proposition hearing for January 16th, 2025 at 10 a.m. I have a roll call, please.
Director Dean?
Thanks.
Yes. Director Thomas?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Vice President Scott?
Aye.
President Gray?
Aye. At this point, we have future agenda items if anybody wants to raise and bring any up. If not, first of all, going on on future agenda items. Okay. We'll go to adjourn to closed session. I'll turn this over to our council, just to announce the closed session item.
Thank you, President Gray. The board will now adjourn to closed session for a conference with its labor negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. District's designated representatives are General Manager Matthew McElhaney and Attorney Che Johnson. The employee groups are the International Association of Firefighters, Local 4635, and the Service Employees International Union, Local 620. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel. Any public comment on this item?
No.
Okay. Hereby adjourned to closed session.